Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the Hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hello, friends.
You're now listening to the Lifestyle, Leisure, and Sports Show you never knew was two of those things.
I think we can all acknowledge that if this fails, you two will be fired and I will remain. So, no pressure.
Bo Bishop, a regional media icon. Winner of Emmys. Purveyor of the good life.
Sir, you don't know that for a fact.
I just said it on the radio.
Also, two guys this company named Employee of the Month.
What are you talking about?
Paul Hogan is Hulk Hogan's brother.
Look it up.
Because it's Hulk Hogan. That's his real name.
One guy is from Australia. The other one is from Tampa.
Maybe he's from Hollywood, brother.
Not brothers. Chops.
Yes, they are.
This is Bishop and Friends.
Let's do it live on a Draft Day Thursday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Paul Feinbaum, 1033. Nathan Zagura coming up at 1133 from the Browns' perspective on things. Your emails on the mailbag Thursday at 10 o'clock. 11 o'clock, we go a little higher or lower. I have always loved the NFL draft. It was one of the few. I did not have cable as a kid. There were two things. I love the NBA draft, too. It's all about hope. I mean, let's just make it pretty plainly obvious what it's about. It's about hope, right? And it's about the unknown. And so the NBA draft, I would go to my grandma's house. She had cable, and I would go and watch the NBA draft. And then I would watch the NFL draft at my grandma's house as well. And I would take it all in, and I'd settle in. For me, the draft, it was a 10 a.m. kick. Was when the Saturday, it used to be a Saturday. It used to be all done on Saturday and Sunday. And the first round started at noon on Saturday. And so me, it was 10 a.m. and I locked into it and loved it. And as a Bears fan, was perpetually disappointed in the pick. It felt like more times than not, the Bears would take the wrong guy for much of my life is the way that it felt growing up and through high school and such. Followed the draft more intimately in 97. That is when a guy I knew named Ryan Leaf went number two in that draft. And in the lead up to that draft, it's hard to wrap your head around now. It was actually 98 draft, 97 season. You look back on it and you would say, well, of course, but you have to understand that there were people in the moment saying Leaf over Manning. That it was an actual debate. When the Colts took Manning, there was a little bit of wonderment, like, well, who's going to go one in this thing? Like, it was possible that Leaf would. And he didn't, obviously, end up going two in a draft, by the way, that also included Charles Woodson and Randy Moss and Peyton Manning. So three gold jackets in that draft. There could have been more, but those three were all near the top of it. All those guys were in the Heisman after the 97 season. Then I moved here in 07 and realized that the draft, moved here in 07. My wife and I were married in 09. Her family is die hard Browns. And I realized that the draft was something different. I realized in 2007, that the draft, was a holiday and the draft was the high point of the season. And for Browns fans, what the draft had become since the return of the Cleveland Browns was a yearly hope that they would get it right because there was so little to look forward to in the seasons, one disappointing season after another. The thinking was if they could hit the lottery in the draft, they could flip it. And you found yourself talking yourself into Brandon Whedon or Colt McCoy and Trent Richardson and Johnny Manziel, Justin Gilbert. We'll get to that. And so you find yourself talking. They would find themselves talking themselves in. Corey Coleman, I mean, there's a million of these recent. Reese is like PTSD looking at his face right now. My God, I lived through all of this. But it's the damnedest thing because for Browns fans, and I don't know if it wasn't the same thing with Bengals fans, although they've had a lot of top picks as well. When the Bengals pick number one overall, they nail it. I mean, they got Carson Palmer. They got Joe Burrow. There's Achilles Smith. Everyone has their misses, but the Bengals in the last 25 years have been blessed with a great deal of relevancy, and a great deal of legitimacy. For most of the last 25 years, the Browns had not been. And it really wasn't until the Myles Garrett draft that things really started to flip for them. And I still think they're kind of in a situation Browns fans are of, I don't know what to do with my hands. what am I supposed to do on the draft when I'm not looking for a savior? And because of the trade of Deshaun Watson, they've had now three straight seasons without a first round pick. And kind of like, what do we do with ourselves? And so, Reese, you're the longest serving Browns fan of any of us. This is, I feel like I've described this accurately. It's the damnedest thing where Browns fans are right now. They have a legitimate team. They've got a team that, well, the Watson thing is its own separate issue, but everything else, every other box is checked. You don't pick until 54, third straight year, no first rounder. After most of your life, this was your Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'd say up until 3 years ago, this was a huge, huge thing, the NFL draft. And I think you encapsulated it perfectly, how Cleveland fan felt about the NFL draft. Probably will feel here in a couple of years, or next year even, when the first round pick does return to Cleveland. This team has never felt like it's ready. Right now it feels ready. It feels ready to go into the NFL season. Damn whatever happens this weekend. That's never really been the case. Again, outside of past two, 3 years, I'll give it, where it feels like the draft is the reset. Now we can go. Maybe this guy's the guy that can make us hit. And largely, no. There have been some hits that have helped with things. You know, Joe Thomas comes to mind. Miles Garrett comes to mind, where it's like, wow, you know, if they can get some help for these guys, like these are pieces that you can build a real NFL franchise around. And such isn't going to be the case tonight, because this Browns team's ready to compete. And yeah, the quarterback question looms, but you can't, again, and I know there will be Browns fans today. There have been Browns fans for the past couple of months, really, that have been like, oh man, you just got to, the Watson thing's got to hit. And for me, it's like, yeah, we'll see if it does.
I think there's also like a second factor with the Browns fans and dealing with this, you know, not having a pick in the draft for three straight years. And it's the fact that, yes, the team is unquestionably, and the organization looks like they are run much better, and the team is unquestionably better, but they have not actually won anything yet with all of these changes. They've won one playoff game. They haven't won the division. They haven't advanced far into the playoffs. Obviously, they haven't had a Super Bowl appearance like their buddies down south here in the state of Ohio. And so there's nothing to kind of rest on that way, that the team is super successful. They are better, but they're not getting that level of success that, you know, fans really crave. And then there's also not the hope of the draft. So right now it's kind of a no man's land for Browns fans here. And it would actually, while you were describing, Bo, how you watched the draft as a kid, it made me think that I don't think one is better than the other, but I think there are a lot of pros and cons to both the way they used to do the draft on Saturday and Sunday versus now. I think the first round is a lot better in this Thursday primetime, but I do think an issue with it is Friday night kind of gets lost in the shuffle a little bit, and that's the second and third rounds. And then Saturday, after a certain point, it's all those later rounds that you're not really in. That's what Sunday used to be, and now that's Saturday. You don't want to split the day in between, and like I said, I think the first round is better, but there are drawbacks to both of them. I did kind of like the Saturday. It's really all in front of you, and you just wake up and get ready for the draft on that day. But the Thursday primetime has been good. But the Browns, if it was the old schedule, is what my point is, you'd still be excited on Saturday because you knew you'd get to their pick or something that they would do, whether it's a trade out or taking the pick, however they would do it. That would be coming on Saturday, so it would all be the same day, whereas now the first round's going to come and go, and the Browns likely aren't going to do anything.
Well, they're definitely not. Here's the deal. You will still rate. I bet you here and Cleveland and Cincinnati, I would be shocked if they were not among the 10 most highly rated markets for this tonight.
I'm interested to see where Cleveland hangs, because this is game big. This is game three. Cavs Magic. I mean, the Guardians play at 1 o'clock, but I'm very interested. It will rate high, but just if it's up near that top echelon like it normally is for the NFL draft, again, regardless of first round pick or not, what Cleveland consumes tonight.
You lived up there for a while. You remember what this was like. When they would draft, when they had picks. I mean, the Apex was back-to-back number one overall picks. And that, you know, this brings you back to the idea of hope. And you think about the hiring for them of John Dorsey. And you think about, this was the guy who drafted Mahomes. This was the guy who helped craft Kansas City. Now you give him the keys.
Detroit.
He's doing it in Detroit. Like, give him the keys to the kingdom. Let's see what happens. And I'll never forget that was when I was just starting to do some things with the Browns. I wasn't doing the stuff daily like I do now, but I was doing some stuff. I did some TV stuff for them, and I'd hosted some shows and stuff for them. And so some of the very early relationship that I had with them in the organization, but was 18. And I remember having, I was having lunch with Omar Ruiz of the NFL Network, who used to be at Channel 4 and is an old buddy of mine. And we were having lunch just down the street, up in Northeast Ohio in Berea. And he goes, man, I'm hearing that they're going to take Baker Mayfield. And this was a couple of days before the draft. And I'm like, I don't think so. It just doesn't fit. Like, I know, look, he's accurate. He's got a strong arm. Everybody knew about the moxie, all of it. But you just kept going back to, it feels like the guy that drafted Mahomes is looking for elite physical traits. And that would be Allen, would be. And everything that I had heard up there, that it was between those two, that it was Baker or Josh was the way that they were going. The thing that was so stupefying about it is you spent the entire previous football season thinking it was between Rosen and Darnold. Remember? I mean, that was the Rosen-Darnold draft. Yeah. That was, everyone is going to, it's going to be those two guys. One of them is going to be the number one pick. I remember they had the radio guy from the UCLA football team on and asked him, who would you take between Rosen and Darnold? And he said, Darnold. Like, he's like, stay away from Josh. And I went, my God, the guy who called his game says, don't draft Josh Rosen. This is how bad this dude is. But as the momentum kept going in 18, and then I want to say it was on Eisen's show where it was like, yeah, the Browns are going to take Baker Mayfield number one. And it was like, wow, that's a wild thing. And to be fair to Baker, he is not a bust. He's not a bust. Josh Rosen's a bust. Josh Rosen went 10th in that draft. Sam Darnold is a bust. Baker Mayfield won a playoff game. He got them to the postseason. He got a second contract, a big one in Tampa Bay. He was not a philosophical fit and probably a personality fit for the people running that organization, but he is not a bust. All that to be said, in a first round that also had Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, that's one of those, boy, what if? And the other thing, just to take it full circle, on the Miles draft, which happened the year before, how fortunate the organization is, and that wasn't this regime that made those picks. It was Sashi Brown, but that made the Miles Garrett pick. How fortunate are they that he's going to get a gold jacket? Because that's the draft that has Watson and Mahomes. That's the draft where the Bears pick second and traded up to get Trubisky. And Watson and Mahomes are in the draft. The Browns could have walked out that draft with Miles and Deshaun in the same draft. You think about that, but that's the draft, right?
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it is, for every Bengals John Ross pick, there's a T. Higgins in the second round. For, you think about the, remember the conversations we had with Threes about Panay Sewell and Ja'Marr Chase? And he's like, well, I never game planned for a left tackle. Here's the deal. Both Chase and Sewell hit. Sewell's great. He got paid. He's one of the best tackles in the league. Ja'Marr Chase is one of the best weapons in the league. So you never know. And I think that's what sells tonight. That's why you'll have big numbers here. You're peddling hope. It's the unknown. There are a few things that are still like out there that way. And I think the top of this draft could provide a lot of it. There could be a lot happening today. We'll keep you posted as the day goes along. Take a look at what happened last night in the sports world. Big one here for the crew. That was awesome. We will get into that. And a Cincinnati Bengal demands a trade. Yeah, another one. All of it coming up. Off and running on a Thursday. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
A lot of hosts have been on our airways in the past 30 years. Some good, some bad, some really bad. Anyway, sorry for that. The
Atlas Butler is built to keep you comfortable, and our plumbing services are no exception. You can rely on Atlas Butler for trusted, convenient plumbing and drain service. Our expert plumbers and drain specialists can take care of anything, from a broken water heater to a clogged drain. Call today, get it fixed today. That's our pledge to you.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
And it's your Uncle Bo here for my great friends at RCD RV. They're my guys, family operated, 5 decades. And when you want to get away, no better solution than hitting the open roads in an RV. Forget the airports, forget the lines, forget all of it. Get outside, get under the stars, the fresh mountain air. Or how about this? If you're going to chase your kids around and use sports, maybe one of those sprinter type things, go with one of those. It could all be yours. The journey starts at RCD RV. RCD has RVs to meet every budget. New campers as low as $13,995. Ohio's best selection of pre-owned travel trailers. They're the best. Fifth wheels, molar homes, whatever you need. Three locations to serve you, whatever your budget is, they'll take care of you. They're all here in Central Ohio, online at rcdrv.com for more on that. Reese, you put it out there. I just said, what the hell with it? Let's make a little poll out of this. Let's see. So we did a little poll in terms of what you're going to watch tonight, and we'll see how this one goes between the NFL draft, the NHL playoffs, the Cavs, and the NBA playoffs, because the baseball is afternoon, right? Do I have that right?
Correct. You got both Guardians and Reds. They're playing at 1.
Your most hopeful, what was the most excited you were coming out of the draft as a Browns fan, Reese, and the most disappointed?
Boy, I don't know if there was ever excitement.
Come on, you had Johnny Fever.
I've always been this cynical Browns fan, to be honest with you. Like,
none of them yet.
I don't remember
Brent,
a time.
You can talk yourself into Trent Richardson.
We're going to crush this league.
Trent Richardson, yes, but I forget who the quarterback was that year. I'm like, well, if they don't. Maybe it was Trent. There was a little bit with Brady.
Did Richardson and Whedon, were they in the same draft?
Yeah.
Whedon did nothing
for
me.
2012.
Whedon was 27 years old.
Yeah, which is, like, can you imagine this
operation? I was like, wasn't that the quarterback that, I was like, wasn't he the pitcher?
Like, people are knocking Penix because he's like 24, and it's like, yeah, that's a lot different than two. I can't believe they spent a first round pick on a 27 year old quarterback.
Then well, I remember cackling
about Winslow because he was a soldier. Oh,
here's the, you know, the thing that sucked about the, well, there's a lot. I was dead wrong on Richardson. I thought, like, how can this guy miss?
Was that the 12 draft?
2012. So Luck went number one. Robert Griffin went second. So, and by the, Griffin wasn't a bust either, by the way. I mean, he hurt his knee. He was rookie of the year. He was great. He just hurt his knee in that draft. Quarterbacks in that draft, had they gone that way, Ryan Tannehill went number eight in that draft. They ended up with Whedon at 22. You're right. Like, the idea of a 27-year-old quarterback now, I mean, just never would do something like that. It was so silly.
I don't think any 27-year-old would get drafted in the NFL draft in the first round now.
And for those asking, like, I'll be 34 in July, so I don't remember drafts in the 90s. So I get it. So, like, we're talking 2000 to now. Think of the Browns' first round draft picks. And boy.
It's only recently. I mean, they've hit on a ton of them recently with Miles and Denzel. And you think of the secondary guys that they've added. They've done great in the second round with JOK and Grant Delpit. I mean, they've hit on a lot of that recently. The Bengals, when they're at the top of the draft, they've hit in the since Tobin's been down there, they've hit. Chops, what was your relationship with the draft growing up? Did you have an NFL team?
It was mostly my dad telling me, hey, this Iowa player could get drafted, which led to me as a chubby little kid from Iowa being very excited that Robert Gallery was the second overall pick of the 2004 NFL draft. But who was picked before him? Eli Manning to the Chargers. So really, he's kind of like the first overall pick of the 2004 NFL draft. His career never really panned out in Oakland.
He wasn't a total bust, though, was he?
He eventually moved to guard, I think. He was huge, so it was a surprise that he couldn't quite make it to tackle. I just don't think he was quite athletic enough. He went through a lot of offensive coordinators at the beginning and moved to guard and had a pretty good career there. I think finished with the Seahawks as well. But obviously, second overall tackle, ends up playing guard. That's a disappointment.
Iowa people are typically Bears fans, right? It seems like
it's a choose your own adventure there. I have cousins. Baseball is a lot weirder too, but you can be. I have cousins who are Packers fans. I have cousins who are St. Louis Cardinals fans, but I don't know if they were ever really Rams fans. But you can go up to Minnesota, you can go to Wisconsin, you can go to Chicago, you can go to St. Louis. But my experience with Chicago is that there's a little bit of a rivalry with Illinois because Illinois thinks they're better because they have Chicago. So some people like to stay away from Chicago.
I see. Reese, growing up here, you have family up in Northeast Ohio, so for you it was a no-brainer. But what was your sense of kids your age growing up in terms of where their rooting interests lie?
It was all over the place. All over the place in Columbus because you had free agents that went. You had Packers. I remember there were a lot of Cowboys. I remember some Bengals. A lot of Steelers fans. So they were never around in the draft. Like, they were always later, and so it never mattered for Pittsburgh, really, for the most part. And you know, I just, as I'm trying to remember back to draft stories of my more formative years, I'm like, a bunch of defensive ends and tackles.
If you go back to like when you were young, I mean, it was Courtney Brown and Gerard Warren, and it was
Cameron Wimbley was there.
Cam Wimbley, I covered him at Florida State. It was it's interesting. You have, when you think about the notion of drafting a quarterback, and you think about how the stars aligned for the Bengals to draft Joe, and it was just the timing worked perfectly. I don't know. Certainly when they went into that season, the notion wasn't it's Joe Burrow. You knew that Tua was in that draft. You knew that Herbert was in that draft. But like, there wasn't this notion that Joe Burrow was going to ascend into what he ended up becoming that senior year at LSU. And then by the time they drafted, it's obviously a no-brainer. So it's always a fun one. Hope is peddled, and hope will come and be lost tonight for several franchises. And we'll get into some of the rumors around the top of the draft coming up here in about 8 minutes. The Crew with a nice one last night, 2-1. Big crowd on hand. So this is the CONCACAF Champions. They call it the Cup now, which is stupid. It should have just been the league. Just keep it league. It used to be CONCACAF Champions League. This is the semifinal round of this. So you win 2-1, Kucha with the goal in the first. And this, to me, coming off of winning the MLS Cup, if they could win this thing, that's a hell of a year. That's a hell of a year. So the next one will be on Monday down in Mexico.
Yeah, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend like, yeah, I know everything about CONCACAF, but I do know this, that like the MLS sort of counts their teams that can make it further into this tournament. They were very excited about a possible semifinal between two MLS teams because it could have been Inter-Miami, but they lost. So if an MLS team like the Crew go all the way to the final, yeah, that certainly says something. And then, yeah, add it to the accolades that they've had here. And it's really cool that like games like that can come to lower.com. Phil was talking to Beam. He said he went to the game. And you know, with his wake up call, that's certainly
that's a commitment.
That's how into it he is. And that's the right choice. I still have to get to a game at lower.com field. I've never been. I've been to the stadium, but I've never been to the game.
They got Montreal on Saturday. You don't necessarily need to know CONCACAF, but boy, you know Cucho.
Yeah.
And how big has that paid off?
Oh my God.
For this, yeah. this club.
And don't you think they'll manage this the way like European clubs manage Champions League? Like you punt on the Montreal game. For next Wednesday, like you know, you don't play like Cucho rests, like you chill.
I'm not 100% sure, just because they've been doing a lot of draws in MLS play recently.
I think that's fine. Like you have a playoff in MLS, like you're not chasing the top of the table, so you got all the time in the world. Like I would put all resources into next Wednesday down in Monterrey. On the other side of it, it's Pachuca and Club America. So we talk about Monterrey, Club America. I mean, those are some of the biggest clubs in Mexican soccer. So like to be able to go down there and play
and to host potentially in the final,
to get Club America here, if that's the way that it worked. They were a draw last night as well. They play next Tuesday against that was on Tuesday rather, so they play Tuesday against Pachuca Club America, and then Monterrey and us play next Wednesday down in Mexico. The NFL draft is tonight. What could happen at the top? Where could Marv go? We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The Fan is live and local with Morning Juice. Caffeinate and dominate.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 9.
The Fan, Ohio sports destiny.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Us.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
NFL draft is what's up. Round one tonight, round two and three on Friday, and then Saturday it will all close out. You were talking in the first segment. So at the top, obviously, it feels like it's going to be Caleb Williams, that he will go number one. And then after that, that's where the intrigue starts. Does it go Washington at two? Do they take Jaden Daniels, which is the way that it's long been rumored? The Patriots at three, are they the team that looks to trade out? Who could come up? Is that Minnesota? Is that Denver? Is that Oakland? Is it a surprise team? Remember a couple of years ago, I want to say it was 2021, it was on this day, the day of the first round, where it got leaked that Aaron Rodgers was wanted out.
Yeah.
That he wanted out of Green Bay and that they were going to trade him. That happened on draft day Thursday. I don't think you're going to see anything like that. If you do see, you won't see anything to that magnitude. If you do, it will be player driven. There's no way Goodell is going to want anything to overwhelm the NFL draft the way that that one did with Rodgers. But the jockeying for that fourth quarterback or the third quarterback will happen there. What happens with Marv at number four? Does he, I tend to think that everything that we've believed for 2 years will hold firm on Marv, and he will go be the first non-quarterback off the board. The question is it at four to Arizona, or if they trade out? And then what would it be with the Chargers at five? If I were to pick a place for him, I would pick LA because I would want him to catch passes from Justin Herbert for his entire career. That feels like a recipe to get a gold jacket, far more than Kyler. As much as I love Scottsdale and all of it, like, boy, I think you go to Los Angeles, you catch passes from Justin Herbert in that uniform, that feels like a win to me. So that's what I'll be rooting for. I understand that's playing for Harbaugh, but I think you deal with it and you play for the Chargers. That to me is a home run. So what I'm rooting for is a trade up at four, Arizona out, Chargers stay, and they draft Marv at number five.
Go Chargers, go!
I think I would at least enjoy whatever little features people like to write leading up to the season about Marvin Harrison and Jim Harbaugh. Now,
yeah.
You know, from enemies to friends or allies, whatever you would call it. The draft this year, and I think it's because, you know, the Bengals have the 18th pick, but we were talking to Jay Morrison yesterday, and this has been conventional wisdom pretty much leading up to it anyways, that they're going to pick an offensive lineman, and they've been doing that for a few years now, so it's not exactly exciting. Obviously, the Browns don't have the pick. And then Marv is really the only Buckeye, and we're pretty sure that he's situated very firmly into 4 or 5, but he's not going any further than, you know, anything right past that, depending on what happens in craziness. And then the quarterbacks have been kind of set. That's what I'm looking for. It's like a weird draft where approaching it hasn't been quite as interesting for me personally as some other years, but I can totally see factors where it gets very interesting tonight. I just don't know what they're going to be. There are some teams that we've circled. Do the Broncos? Do the Vikings? Do they want to move up? Okay, if that happens, then that becomes something. Does Malik Nabers, was this not a smokescreen? Does he actually get picked before Marv? That would be something. But I don't know what those are going to be, and it does feel like the stuff that we've been predicting for a matter of months is mostly what's going to happen. So the first thing that goes off kilter from that is where, like, the real intrigue will start for me.
Yeah, don't you think, Reese? I mean, the curveball is, I think it's New England. That could be your curveball. If they go, because everyone anticipates Arizona trading, right? I mean,
right.
Everybody, they're either going to take Marv or they're going to trade out. Anything else would be pretty shocking. So the question is, do the Patriots, who are coming off of a very disappointing run, the first non-Belichick draft in 20-plus years, are they the team that says, boy, these quarterbacks are nice, but we need a lot of things. And so let's get out of this, and, you know, maybe we'll take a swing at Penix or Knicks down the road in the first round. But if we can pick up another one next year, you look at their roster, they're not in the vicinity of competing with New York, Miami, and Buffalo in that
division.
They're the team close.
For me, that, like, they pick a quarterback and they break that toy early because they're just not suited to have a number one guy, a first round pick, a top five quarterback come in with the expectation that you got to start right away. You got to start this guy right away. And it's like, is anybody with that New England organization right now, players and coaches, prepared for that ask? No.
Doesn't seem like it.
They're breaking in a brand new head coach. Guy's not named Bill Belichick. Like, so for me, it becomes more interesting to who wants into this. Like, who wants to trade up with New England? Who wants to get in? I mean, maybe Washington feels the same way. Like, do they?
I think
it seems Drake May.
Or either way, I think Washington's new ownership. This is what happens, right? This is what happens, like, when you have an expansion team or new ownership. Like, you want the flash. I think that's probably how the Browns ended up with Johnny Manziel, right? As opposed to a homeless person talking to Jimmy Haslam on the street.
I mean, I really wanted the homeless person story to be right, though.
You know, I mean, the crazy thing about the Manziel draft is the other guy in that first round was the bigger bust. Justin Gilbert was even worse. I mean, you could not have done worse than what they did in terms of, like, their personality profiles of those two picks, and everything about those two humans was just the biggest miss. But when you have new ownership, when you have expansion teams, what you get is, man, I'd really like to excite the fan base. I don't even think it's necessarily monetarily driven. Like, I want to sell a lot of jerseys. I think you just want something to be excited about and rally behind. And so when I think of Washington, like, whether it's Daniels or May, either one of them with new ownership, there's something to be excited about. You can peddle hope for a couple of years. Eventually they'll get those uniforms fixed and maybe the branding fixed and all of it. But in the meantime, like, you need something now to get that fan base revved up. You got the new ownership. You got rid of Snyder. Is that fair to who they pick it to? No, probably not. But it's also not, I agree with you, it's not it's not as bad a situation as New England's in. There are some McLaurin's there. They've got some weapons. Their defense is pretty good. They've got some weapons. Whereas New England to me looks like there's a lot that's needed. So to me, Washington seems locked. Bears are locked 3, and then it gets interesting at 4 or 5, wherever that all that goes.
Yeah, and then if the Patriots do trade out, what does that also do to 4, 5, 6? Does somebody then move up to go get the fourth quarterback? It doesn't really appear that there's any other position that anybody's moving up for, so do one of those other candidates then get nervous and move up after seeing quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3?
Stay there for a second. If that happens, if there's a trade up to 3, that would likely be Minnesota, right? They have artillery. So if they go to 3 to get Drake May, then I think you will see. I don't know that you would see a quarterback run.
Then you might see the precipitous drop for a guy like JJ McCarthy.
Correct. Then all of a sudden, maybe McCarthy drops to, I think Denver picks at 11. That could be a situation where he drops till there. Then all of a sudden you could see quarterbacks really fall. Because if Minnesota comes up, then the value of 4 just isn't there. Because I don't think, unless it's Vegas.
Yeah,
cool. I don't think Denver can afford to move up. They don't have picks. They got rid of all their picks in the Russell Wilson deal. So I don't think they have assets that are tradable.
In that scenario, actually, that you just laid out, do the Broncos get nervous enough and want to move up? Because the Patriots actually end up with 11 if they swap with Minnesota, and the Broncos have 12. So I wonder what that would do. But again,
It's all theory. Yeah. My theory is that Denver is tanking. I think they're bottoming out.
I think there's good reason to that. It just seems like, can you do it so obviously by bringing in Zach Wilson and actually like claiming that you can like a reclamation project on his career and make that work, or are people just going to have to deal with it for a year?
Well, I mean, in the year that, yes, you can do it that brazenly. It's been done. I mean, the Browns did it with that one year. They had Cody Kessler and Brock Osweiler and DeShone Kizer, and it was like, wait, what is this? The receiver situation is even worse. So you can do it.
It'll be interesting to see what it's like, though, for somebody if the Broncos really do go all in on this tank, and right now they're making kind of those steps, and if they don't pick a quarterback in the draft, then yeah, I'll totally be on board with that. But a guy like Sean Payton isn't the like sacrificial lamb for it, which a lot of teams do that. They bring in a coach for 1 or 2 years so that he can bottom it out. They can fire him and start anew. But that wouldn't be the plan with Sean Payton. So we haven't really seen the tank align with a coach that they want for post-tank and a coach that also seems to want the tank at the same time. Because like Lovie Smith, he didn't want to tank with the Texans, and actually almost it worked out for Houston, but he almost ruined it by winning that final game against the Colts and getting the second pick instead of the first.
Sean Payton also does kind of feel like the goofball that looks at Zach Wilson and thinks to himself, I can make that work.
He's got the ego for it, for sure. The best example of what you described is Hugh Jackson.
Yeah.
Like he didn't want any part of it. Now, I feel like when you looked at that roster, honestly, you'd know where they were, but he didn't want to participate. Hugh Jackson's here, baby. Yeah. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the thing that Payton has and why it could work for him is, first of all, they've given up a ton to get him. They're paying him a lot. He's got the reputation. He's one of those few guys who could survive it. You know, slow build. He could survive all of that. The one thing with them though, is they just don't have assets. So they've given up so many picks for the Wilson stuff and Payton, honestly, that they're in a bit of a tough spot when it comes to trying to move up. So that the first hour will be very fascinating, and Marvin's future will kind of be at stake there in that first hour of that draft. The Bengals pick in the first round. They have tried desperately to land offensive line help in early rounds of the draft. They have missed. They need to hit on this one. All the while, they got people who aren't happy. We'll give you the details on that coming up next. Fisherman Friends are here on The Fan.
The sound of Paul Keel's calling a Buckeye game is erotic.
Oh, yes.
Your home of the Buckeyes, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cash back in the industry with up to 5% cash back on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
After putting up with Dom DeBerry for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
Well, the both the Browns and the Bengals are in different spots. Both of them, I think, organizationally are in the same spot in terms of, hey, we now the Bengals are, from the outside looking in, the Bengals are much more of a certainty, right? Get healthy, keep everybody, go win the damn Super Bowl. Like, that's pretty simple. They can do it. Everybody knows it. Burrow's been to a Super Bowl, so forth, so on. The Browns have the Watson thing hanging over them, but other than that, the rest of the roster is go win the Super Bowl. So both of these teams enter this draft without a need right away. I do think the Bengals are clearly the one where tackle would be a spot where, and it feels like that's the way that they're going to go. Now, they've struggled drafting offensive line. It's interesting how teams have blind spots. This Browns regime has an incredible blind spot when it comes to drafting receivers. This can't do it. Struggled. I mean, they drafted Cedric Tillman last year. He didn't really do anything. Probably their best hit was Donovan Peoples-Jones. They drafted Anthony Schwartz before Amon-Ra St. Brown. Andrew Berry was a big proponent of Corey Coleman. So there's all these examples of, now none of those were first rounders, but all these examples of them trying to land receivers and failing. The Bengals can do that in their sleep. They can draft weapons. They can draft all linebackers and secondary and all of it. Their one blind spot, though, is offensive line. I mean, just in recent years, Billy Price, Jonah Williams, Jackson Carman, all early round picks where they were trying to land the plane on the offensive line. They have everything else. That's the thing you're waiting on for them. And they will go into it, I'm sure, picking that tonight as well, but also with a little bit of a cloud over them. So there are now two guys who want to get new contracts there. We know about T. Higgins. He received the franchise tag from the team. He requested the trade in March. Higgins did acknowledge earlier this month that he expects to play for the Bengals this season. And there's been no inclination. We had Morrison on yesterday. They are not trading T. Higgins unless there's some sort of a first round pick, but that's just not going to happen because it's a receiver rich draft. By the way, I'm not going to close the door entirely on T. Higgins signing a contract extension in Cincinnati, because I do think that we're going to get to a point where the wide receiver market starts to dry up a little bit. So that's something to monitor. Today, we get the news that Trey Hendrickson is requesting a trade. He has been great since he's been there. The quote from his team is, our number one goal is to get a long-term commitment from them. If we can't, then we're asking for a trade. Hopefully, if he gets traded, that's what we do, get a long-term commitment somewhere else. Schefter was quick to say Cincinnati is not interested in trading Hendrickson. No kidding. Of course they're not. The question is, will this Bengals operation get these guys locked up? Will they be willing to? Part of the Burrow extension was, Burrow said this, they said it, we want to be able to keep this core together. Well, he's part of that core.
At the pie conversation again. You got to understand, these dummies need to understand that there is a pie and Joe Burrow's getting a lot of slices. And so that leaves less for you right now. Like, Mike Brown's just got to sit them all down, apparently. Agents, players, staff alike, and be like, look, guys, there's a pie. All right. And you only get a certain piece of that pie. And if you don't like that piece, just wait. Be patient. More pie's coming.
Speaking of Mike Brown, I think Dave Biddle, a longtime Bengals fan, had a pretty good point about Mike Brown. And we know this about him. And I would side with him on this being true, is he's not, you know, say what you will about him, he's not going to give up an asset for less than it's worth just because that guy wants out. He's just not the owner that's going to do that. So if you're a Bengals fan, while this is concerning, know that they're not just going to acquiesce just because the guy says, I don't want to be here.
Take it a step further. I think you could make an argument that Mike Brown would rather lose something for nothing than lose something for less. I mean, they did that. Jesse Bates walked. Looks like T. Higgins is going to walk.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're not in the business. Like, you could probably get a number two for T. Higgins right now. You could, but they're not gonna.
No,
and I don't blame them. They're in win now mode, but historically he's done that.
It's a real shame because last year was the win now season for them, and the Burrow injury just completely derailed it. Did you know Hendrickson had 17 and a half sacks last season and second only to T.J. Watt?
Yeah, he's a beast.
Yeah, I knew he was good. I didn't know he got to that number. I mean, that's over a sack a game.
No, yeah, he's a total beast. Here's the other thing with Mike Brown, and this is something we talked about yesterday when we kind of very sort of broached the subject of two Ohio teams needing either new stadiums or renovated stadiums. The Browns are going to go all new stadium, but the Bengals need to do something at their stadium as it's falling woefully behind. Remember this. The Brown family is not liquid. Yeah, they're wealthy. They're billionaires, but they're billionaires because they own the Bengals, and the Bengals are worth $2 billion or whatever the number is on the Bengals. They're typically one of the most, one of the least valuable teams in the National Football League. But they are not liquid. They don't have straight cash. So the Browns and the Haslam family do have straight cash because they've sold Pilot Flying J to Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett. And with that comes tens of billions of dollars of liquidity. So what does liquid allow you to do? Liquid allows you to renegotiate a contract and turn guaranteed money into signing bonuses. And so people go, well, why are the Browns always able to stay out of salary cap jail? And it's funny because every year you see, you know, some graphic about how the Browns are going to be up against it from a cap standpoint. They've renegotiated everybody. They've redone all the contracts. So they're fine. And they know this because they're 3 years out on it. Are the Bengals, would the Bengals be as willing or able to transition contracts into bonuses to get out of cap hell? Are they even able to do that?
Yeah, how many could they do it for, and how many guys does that require them to keep? I don't know. They finally sold the naming rights, and then they built the outdoor. So like the Joe Burrow effect it's a little bit of two-sided on that. It has led to them making more money, but yeah, it also means they have to spend more money, like guaranteed now. And Joe Burrow is now on his contract. He's not on his rookie deal anymore. And that's where they find themselves, that can you pay all these guys? We already saw some attrition last year. Some of the guys you mentioned that they let walk. Is it going to be a point where they have to pick between Hendrickson and T. Higgins? And with Ja'Marr Chase on the docket, you'd think that would be Hendrickson.
They're not going to have to do any of that right now, though.
No, they don't. They won't do any of it now. So, it won't. These will be down the road.
While this, I saw that come across last night, and it felt to me, it's like, okay, great. Like, it didn't feel like we do thing or not a thing later, but not a thing right now.
Here are the NFL teams by Mike. I'm just going to go through this really quickly. That are the wealth of the ownership comes from the fact that they own the team. Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, Paul Brown was a coach, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Think about that. He was a coach.
He is the Brown in Browns.
He's the Brown in Browns. Yeah. So Cincinnati Bengals, Pittsburgh Steelers, both those two in the North. Nobody in the East now. They've all been sold over. In the South, Ursay with the Colts.
The South. The money. Yeah.
AFC South.
I know. Yeah.
No Jackson. No Tennessee. Yeah, Tennessee, Adams, because that's Oilers. That's their wealth.
Chargers are another one.
Chargers would be, Kansas City would be with the Hunt family. Vegas for sure. That's old school. I don't think the Maras still own the Giants entirely. I think that's kind of I think they have a piece of it, but I don't think it's all them anymore. Packers are.
Yeah, I don't know what their situation is. How that works. We've talked about that before.
Nobody knows on the Packers. No, Ford with Detroit. McCaskey. So that's Hallis with the Bears. In this NFC South, no. In the NFC West, Bidwell with Arizona. Everybody else, well, Niners, now, DeBartolo.
In a weird way, is technically Jerry Jones all of his money in the Cowboys at this point.
It is now.
It's the Cowboys.
So he's Haslam before Haslam.
Yes.
He made his money elsewhere, but then bought the Cowboys for $100 million, and now they're worth $10 billion. So he took his thing and then turned it into what it is, and then said, this is a much better business. I'll do this. We'll hit your email coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The two most mature people working at the radio station. And that's just because they wear pants.
The pervert and the skivvies.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays at noon.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a Thursday edition of the program here, a draft day Thursday edition. It is 10 o'clock on a Thursday. It is at this time where we go into the mailbag. Hit it, boys.
Our comment box is always open. Any feedback is mostly appreciated.
The mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a let up. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more, and you got to get it out. And the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in. Again, again, again.
Bishop and Friends present emails.
All right, here we go. We're going to start with Kent with this one, who writes, his question is, his subject matter is Group of Five playoff. Hey, Bowie writes, longtime listener, first time writer here. I live in Group of Five country, Bowling Green, Ohio, and I've thought for the longest time about the Group of Five schools need their own playoff. It seems obvious to me that more meaning that a game has, the more interest people will draw to it. I couldn't agree with you more. Speaking from the perspective of a MAC alumni, it feels like our schools have suffered from games that lack inherent meaning for at least 15 years. I would absolutely love to see a Group of Five separate from the Power Five so that we could get more meaningful games and, let's be real, bigger economic impact around my area as well. Kent, we agree. And yeah. I think for the first time, there's real movement towards this. Derek Dooley's behind this. We talked about this earlier in the week. This private equity group that he's trying to put together to come up with a Group of Five playoff and a subdivision of, I guess, what's Power Four plus two right now. And to me, everything you say are things that we talked about and we've talked about many times in regard to not just the MAC schools, but quite honestly, this could be a place where a school like Oregon State and Washington State could end up in this by the time we're all said and done. Who knows? But I think that everything that you say is accurate, that the economic impact, not just on those he's from Bowling Green, but where he is, Toledo, Kent, those type of places, Akron, but all the MAC spots, that the economic impact there would be big, that the playoffs would have a great deal of interest, that their games would have a great deal of interest during the season, far more than previously. One thing to remember, and I will not pretend to be an expert on this, but you have to remember that MACtion and all of that started because ESPN needed the black to go away in the middle of the week. So historically, it wasn't like the MAC was always playing on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. Like, that happened because ESPN needed programming in November, in October. Reese, when you were at OU, was it full-on MACtion that whole time?
Yeah, you had midweek games, always, Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And I mean, it's the same thing now, right? It's just a different day of the week, and it's a different time of the year where bowl games are likely going to go away with the expanded college football playoff because it isn't stopping at 12. And so when that happens, less bowl games, ESPN needs some more programming. Enter Group of Five playoff that can be used not only on ESPN, but ESPN2 and ESPN+. And whatever other streaming services want to get in on this.
Why stop there? CBS Sports, Fox, NBC, like.
How did MACtion nights compare to Saturday game days? What was the atmosphere
like? Much better on MACtion nights.
Oh, really? Better on MACtion nights?
Yeah, Saturday noon games were.
Everybody wanted to watch something else and do something else.
Free Chipotle if you show up to Peden Stadium.
I will say this.
And the bars got in the way of my walk to Peden Stadium every Saturday. It was crazy.
Let me ask you this. Are most of the MAC schools in that boat as OU, or are some of the other ones? Is there a great MAC football school? I don't know. Like, is Toledo great?
Eastern Michigan tried to knock down that cinder block wall that one time.
I feel
Western
like they're
Michigan
more
had a moment under PJ.
They're more similar to Ohio than what you're saying is where the campus. Whereas in Columbus, everything on campus revolves around the football stadium.
Yeah.
In the MAC footprint, it's just a Saturday, and so that's a thing to do.
I don't think you can do it with the Buckeyes, but I just think you can do it with the 1AA schools. Could you see a scenario where they were playing for something and there were 30,000 people on a Saturday going to game at Peden if there was something on the line? Because that happens in 1AA. The top of the 1AA, great attendance. It is the thing to do. It's just a smaller level.
I'm not sure with the time of the year that this would likely be played, if students are even going to be on campus.
Sure.
But it would be a television program that would write.
Yeah, I agree.
I think one of the hard things about MAC schools especially, because, you know, you look at somewhere like Boise State, and they were a very, very good program and still are a pretty good program. But they were able to build all this because in Idaho, that's then now your flagship athletic team. Whereas all the states that MAC schools are in, there are, if not one, maybe even multiple bigger league schools in your state. And so how do you compete with that? Not only just competing with it just from like the state's eyes, but how many kids go to MAC schools and are fans of the bigger school, actually? How many kids go to Eastern Michigan but are really Wolverines?
Yeah. yeah, I mean, we deal with that.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, the group of five, they should have been on this sooner because they should have known right away that after UCF went 13-0, then 12-0 the next year, lost in their bowl game and went 12-1 technically, and really didn't even sniff the playoff, that they did not care about getting the group of five into the 4-team playoff, and this is only just to avoid litigation that they're getting a spot in the 12-team playoff. And even Cincinnati, when they make it, because they'll be like, but Cincinnati did make it. Remember, all you needed two Power Five conferences to not be good. You needed other teams to lose to the right teams, namely, you know, like Ohio State lost to Michigan, that kind of stuff, for them to be like, I guess we have to put them in. Their hands were kind of tied. They'd have no interest in really playing ball with the group of five schools.
This one from Kevin, subject title, hashtag. Hey, guys, since you're talking about Mike Connolly about being a favorite, with that being said, who do you guys put on your OSU Mount Rushmore, any sport, male or female? I actually don't even think there's a debate. I think it's four that are locked. It's Jesse, Jack, Woody, and Archie. You don't even have to say their last names.
Yeah.
That's it. Now, what I do think is interesting, those are all old dudes or long gone dudes. So, like, what does it take? This is probably a conversation for the summer. What does it take for someone to crack this code? A lot. I mean, you're talking about one of the most impactful athletes ever in Jesse Owens. You're talking about perhaps the greatest golfer of all time in Jack. You're talking about one of the most impactful coaches all time in Woody, and the only two-time Heisman winner in Archie. That, you know.
Are all four of them Ohioans, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've also got that factor in there.
No, that's the list. There's no cracking it.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Archie's the most recent. He played in 74 and 75.
Like, how could you even put together an argument if, say, they had somebody with, like, a Joe Burrow-type season and this Heisman and a national championship? And
that's what it would take.
Yeah, but how do you put that up against the accolades of those four? It would be, even then, a very tough argument. And that's, those seasons are few and far between in college football, so that seems like a great Mount Rushmore. Like it's
an all time. I mean, it's one like you can put up against anybody.
Because it reminds me, I was having this conversation with my dad about like Caitlin Clark and like where she falls like in the athletes in the Mount Rushmore for Iowa athletes. And I was like, basically for me, it's like her, Niall Kinnick, Hayden Fry. Like those are the only guys, and none of them have the accolades that you're talking about with Ohio State. And it's so when you're comparing the players, you can actually kind of compare their careers, like their actual athletic achievements. And at Ohio State, it almost seems like that list of guys goes beyond the athletic achievements.
Yeah, good luck minimizing Jesse Owens standing up to Hitler.
Right.
I was just about to say, look, Jesse Owens might have stuck it to Hitler, but did he ever beat Alabama?
It would take what you said. It would take the Burrow season here. Basically, perfect season, national championship, Heisman.
And it would have to be football. A basketball player is not getting on the list.
Yeah, I'm trying. So, like, I'm wondering if there was Jack was 4 years at Ohio State. Yeah, I don't know. There's no way to go there. And they're all locked in. I think it's cool. They're all first name only. You know exactly who they are. This one from Andrew. Subject matter. Let's talk baseball. Parenthetically, I know. I'm a diehard Reds fan. Ellie De La Cruz is up for a contract extension. Scott Boras, his agent, does not do sweetheart deals. Does Major League Baseball wish Ellie played for a different team? Very similar to the cases you bring up all the time of Trout, still informally with Shohei. P.S. What in the hell is up with all these tornadoes? No way should Ohio be leading the country in tornadoes. Fantastic point on that. All right, Reese, I'm leaning on you. Ellie De La Cruz is up for an extension?
Oh, boy.
Is this real?
Boy, is he. Yeah. I don't know.
When's his deal up? What's
the end of this season?
What?
Oh, he's a true free agent? He's a free agent next season.
I'm sure he wants an extension, but it's got to have a couple years, right?
Is it one of those situations where he's just far enough into it that he hasn't?
When they brought him up from the minors. wait a minute. 2024. Yeah, no, he's up for an extension at the end of the 2024 baseball season.
So he's in the last year of his contract right now.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of when he was brought up from the minors, if at the time when he was brought up, it voided a year of service for him. Because sometimes clubs get finicky with that. Boras isn't going to help Cincinnati out at all, but I do think they get an extension done with Ellie.
Well, to his other question, yes, Major League Baseball would probably prefer to him not play for the Cincinnati Reds.
I don't know if they want him
wearing pinstripes.
I think they're okay with Ellie in Cincinnati. Actually, I think
you can't
have everybody playing for the Dodgers, Yankees, Mets. Like, that can't happen, or the Phillies.
Dodgers,
they're going to try.
Sure, like there's going to be he's going to be a very hot commodity. But I think the Reds get something done.
You'd think with Votto gone too, they'd want to like stabilize, like having a star and having somebody that people want to come to the ballpark to come see.
I don't think the Castellanos have been great, obviously, but I'm certainly not here suggesting that they aren't going to want to pay him whatever the market is. The question is, can they afford the market? And is there motivation for him to be there, or is it motivation to be elsewhere? You don't know what anybody's why is. You really don't. But yeah, the big guns are going to come swinging for him for sure. Last one, this one from Larry. Subject, officially endorsed. Bo, love your weekly tips on officially endorsed. Heard one, I believe, last week where you used absinthe and bourbon. I have a little bottle of absinthe, but I don't know what to do with it. Where can I find the recipe of the cocktail? So I did a Sazerac. Rye is probably the one that whatever rye you have on your shelf would work just fine. So it's an ounce and a half of rye. It's a half ounce of absinthe. Two shakes of bitters. It's basically you use the absinthe in an old fashioned is the simplest way to do it. But a couple of shakes of bitters and then away you go. You need a sugar cube too. That's the other part of it. But you do that, you got a Sazerac, and that's a win for everybody. Speaking of a win, I saw this a couple of days ago, and for some reason it slipped my mind. Pretty remarkable what Deion Sanders is doing in the transfer portal in terms of how he's going about his business. We'll get into that as we go around college sports coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Wake up with The Fan. Eat lunch with The Fan. Go to bed with The Fan. Dream about The Fan. Then change your sheets. Gross.
Ew, you guys are gross, but stick around in case I don't find anyone else.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the Hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
And we are sponsored by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Fast, sustainable weight loss without medication is the solution for weight loss. Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Okay, I saw this over the weekend and I had to double check. And then I saw Staples got into it and Ari got into it. And I was like, this is real, huh? And it's a pretty interesting thing. So Coach Prime out of Colorado, who was the story, obviously, of college football through the first month of the season and then disappeared, quite frankly, afterwards, has gone with a very unique way of recruiting in terms of not really interested in it from a high school standpoint and then be ultra aggressive in the portal. Now, the problem is it feels like as many people as they have added. So they added Dallin Hayden last week and then they lost the guy, the freshman who was the 4-star kid who scored 4 touchdowns in their opener against TCU. He then transferred out. So when you look at their roster, you can't tell if it's a net positive or net negative what ended up happening there. But what he's doing is his children are doing the recruiting. So Shiloh is tweeting out, if you're a defensive transfer, DM me. Offensive transfers, DM Shadur Sanders.
He couldn't handle all of it. One takes defense, one takes offense.
I guess it's brilliant. And I saw Bill Bender had a story on next year's quarterbacks and that he had Shadur number one, as the number one quarterback in college football heading into next year's NFL draft. So that would help, but you're also running out of time. You've got 5 days. And the fact that they ignored everything else, I talked about this about a week ago. It's hard for me to, would I be surprised if it was two and out for him at Colorado? No, not at all. I could totally see him bailing when his kid leaves.
Especially now, it's weird. I think Deion is the reason that Colorado felt comfortable to kind of be the team that led the way to go to the Big 12. But I wonder if for Deion, now he looks around and he's like, hey, we're not playing on the West Coast, you know, anymore. It's not exactly the team I signed up for. So I think that would be a drawback factor to him, that now he's just living in this Big 12 world that is just really not a headline to write home about. And it's not coming together on the field. He doesn't seem interested in doing the quarterback or the recruiting type stuff. And then this stuff is what has me concerned about what the roster is going to look like this year, because they are still talented at the top end, but it was all the other parts filling in your roster that failed them throughout the year. One, injuries. They didn't have the next guy up. And yeah. Two, on the line of scrimmage, they did not have good enough players to compete at the Power 5 level. Trying to recruit here, is he falling into the trap that kind of we fell into, that we thought this spring window was going to be a lot crazier than it has appeared to be?
Seems like it.
And he doesn't have enough players available, because he said last week, we had a thing from him where we're not looking for backups. And it's like, well, you need people on your roster, and some of them are going to be backups. You got to start looking for that. Like, what is there? Are they going to get to the 85 scholarships?
I don't know.
Where are their numbers at?
I don't know. I think no matter what happens here, this will be a resounding success for him in Boulder and for Boulder, for the University of Colorado. They're in the Big 12. If he weren't there, I could argue they'd be sitting in the same spot as Washington State and Oregon State, chilling with no place to go, because a great deal of the reason they're in the Big 12 is because of the juice that he had for Colorado football and the ratings they delivered. They were the first to go, to your point. If he's not there, what's the difference between them and Washington State and Oregon State?
And does
proximity
the Big 12,
to Denver?
Does the Big 12 hold a grudge then against them too without Deion?
For bailing.
Yeah, because like what do we, you know, Colorado was the worst team in Power 5 arguably the year before Deion. So without his star power, why would they have been interested in a team that left them and never accomplished anything near what their program was capable of previously, but really just nothing in general? They didn't do anything in the Pac-12.
No. Keandre Lambert-Smith, the Penn State receiver from a year ago, goes to Auburn. This isn't in thing or not a thing. This is not a thing. It's fine. It's not going to do anything. But if you are a Penn Stater, I would say it's probably a big thing, because they got Julian Fleming. They were looking for weapons. He was going to be a part of it. They wanted to have both of them, among others. And you look at that roster, and to me, it just seems like kind of a Nowheresville roster there. So they needed receivers, and another one bailed on him, and he ended up at Auburn. We have some news in the portal, Reese. You just mentioned with one of our guys, Felix Akpara.
A pair of them, yeah. Felix Akpara is going to Tennessee. He was second in the Big Ten in blocks per game this season. And then Scotty Middleton's going to Seton Hall.
So, and that's, they were in on Middleton in the recruiting process, right? That's Shaheen Holloway.
Yeah, that's him.
At Seton Hall. They were in on him on that. You also had the news yesterday that Oakland forward Trey Townsend, they were in a two-horse race. Arizona wins the horse race. And so the Buckeyes get past there. Arizona checked all the boxes. He said, I was looking forward during this process. Look forward to getting to Tucson and playing with Coach Tommy Lloyd, who has a proven track record of producing NBA players similar to me. Roster building now, It's so tricky, and it's funny. I was just curious, like, how's it going for Calipari at Arkansas? How's it going for Mark Pope at Kentucky? Cause there was that big kind of trade off there. And some of the former Kentucky guys are going with Cal. Some of them aren't. Dusty May's done really well at Michigan in the portal, including getting one of our own in Roddy Gale, up there, but he landed an Alabama transfer and such. Jake's trying to put together a team on the fly here. And they still need several guys just to fill out the roster. So they're in on these guys, but boy, how do you decide who's going to get the majority of my attention? And who's the guy that you say, we got to get that guy? And how do you make sure you do? Because the stakes here could not possibly be higher.
And while you're doing it, how do you make sure that bringing that guy in doesn't rub somebody who you thought was locked in on the team the wrong way? You know, I mean, maybe he would have made the Bradshaw for Akpara trade, but that's kind of what it ended up being, when I think the idea was, hey, he pledged, so let's go get another big and we compare them together. And now you've got another roster spot. So it's going both ways. And this is that anxiety we talk about with the coaches, but it's even worse in basketball than in football, because, I mean, don't get me wrong, especially at quarterback, one player can make the difference, but generally you're probably at the very least in the vicinity of where you're going to be, even if you lose out on one player that you really wanted in the portal, or even if one guy who you really wanted to keep leaves through the portal. But basketball could all hinge on one or two players. That, like, if you get this guy, you are now a tournament team, maybe even a high seed. Whereas if you don't get this guy, you might be struggling to get to the bubble.
You also, the other thing you have with hoops is you have those guys who entered the portal and declared, that want to see how their draft thing is going to play out.
Are they returning guys to schools? Are they actually in the portal? How much are they actually playing the field there?
Here's what it amounts to. Akpara for Bradshaw, Gale for Michi. That's basically the one for one on each thing.
Okay.
That's what you did. So, yeah, I take both of it. I take both. Akpara hurts, though, because that's the one. To me, that's much worse than Gale, because I think you would have had something pretty unique with Akpara and Bradshaw. And I do not think that the intent was bring in Bradshaw and we'll whatever happens, Akpara is fine. My hunch is that the hope was that they'd both be there.
They put in a lot of work playing in with Akpara over the last 2 years and moved him up to the starting lineup when he wasn't quite ready for it at the beginning of this previous season, was by the end of the year, but I think that's because of all the experience he got, and now that guy's gone. I mean, there was times where it felt like Jameson Battle and Akpara were the two best players on this team near the end of the year, especially once Diebler took over.
Yes. Yeah. I think all of that's fair. Paul Feinbaum, favorite NFL draft stories. We'll get into that coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
We've been your Jackets flagship station since day one. All the goals, all the action, all the memories. Your home for the Columbus Blue Jackets, The Fan, Ohio Sports Desk.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the Hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Us. With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
Thursday, 10:30, we head out on the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Conversation with a great friend of the program, Paul Feinbaum, the Paul Feinbaum Show on ESPN and SEC Network and everywhere else. Paul, thanks for taking the time. NFL draft is tonight. I'm curious, in your years covering college football at the very, very highest level, is there a guy who you looked at and said, boy, they've got him all wrong, he's much better than they realize in the NFL? And is there one, conversely, where they got that you missed on, that you thought someone would be a better player than they ended up being in the league?
Yeah, I think, brother, the first question, I always thought Dak Prescott was better than he fared, and I believe he was third or fourth round and turned out to be pretty well. The second one, I can't help but get last year's draft out of my head, and it's Bryce Young. I was convinced he was one of the greatest college players I've ever seen. And today, and maybe it's being a little too close to the sun, living in the same city as he is, but I'm afraid that may have been a bust. I didn't like anything I saw. Despite the fact that he had a terrible cast around him, he didn't make any good decisions the entire year.
That's the hardest thing, because guys like Young, and we deal with that with a lot of kids who play, you know, here at Ohio State, where they look so good, because, and they're also in perfect situations in many instances. They're throwing to first-round picks and all of this stuff, and then they go, and that situation you're in the city you live in Charlotte is a mess. And so, like, would Bryce have been better off? How much did his circumstance dictate what he ended up being in year one?
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably would have been better served to spend a little time backing up as opposed to just being thrown out there with no offensive line. But I'll never get this out of my head. I'll throw in another player who I didn't think would be great, but I thought he would be better. And I was sitting next to Tim Tebow at the Ohio State Alabama game. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, the Ohio State Georgia game a year and a half ago. Right before we were doing our show, and they were warming up, and Tebow told me, just watch CJ Stroud and the way he throws the ball. He said, I've never seen anyone with that kind of wrist action, with that type of zip. And it really got me. I never let that get away from me, because I mean, this is a superb quarterback in college watching another guy. And as I watched the Panthers debate, I always had the sneaking suspicion they were making the wrong choice.
And it turned out, in retrospect, after 1 year at least, it looks like they did. Lot going on in terms of the conversation around the sport that you and I love so much in college football. The college football playoff spring meetings. Boy, they love a meeting. We love to have meetings and do the Marriott points and all of those things. Sankey, with a small group of reporters yesterday, saying, quote, the fact that people have interest in throwing ideas out, that's up to them. I spend my time on what I have to do, speaking to this Super League thing. You and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. There's just no motivation for the Big Ten and the SEC to do something like this. So that part we know. But I am curious what your thoughts are on the SEC and the Big Ten and kind of their view of where they are in the sport right now. Because there is... You have what's going on in the ACC or what's trying to go on there. Are the SEC and the Big Ten fully aligned, and is the attitude more of a, let's wait and see what crumbles here and if there's any pieces we want, or are they what they were a decade ago, aggressively looking to add to their mix?
I think they are aligned. And what you read into Sankey's comments is his total frustration with what happened nearly 3 years ago when the playoff was announced for last year, remember, not for this year. And he still has a hard time getting over the ACC and then the Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren bailing on him. And yeah. You know, most people move on. He's not letting it move on. And I think he used that motivation and that frustration to form the alliance with Tony Petitti, who he had a former relationship with, who thought long term as opposed to thinking about himself, which Kevin Warren did. Kevin Warren was using the Big Ten for was trying to get Roger Goodell's job at the right time. Obviously, that's not going to happen now. And I think the alignment is going to get most interesting, Bo, at that point in time when the ACC begins to blow up. How does Sankey and Petitti, away from everyone, help each other not get into this, you know, being played against each other? And I'm thinking specifically of a school like Florida State when I say that.
Yeah, for sure. That brings me to my next question, because you see this judge and the ruling in the Florida State thing. I was talking with a buddy of mine who's got a little bit of a influence on the Clemson side of thing yesterday, and I said, you know, where are you with this? You're going to get out of this thing? And he goes, well, what's FSU going to do? And I'm like, is there anything substantial to any of this this fight that Florida State is fighting, and how many others will it take to join in for it to become substantial? Because to me, from here, it doesn't seem like it is yet.
I think what it's about is simple litigation 101. Is can FSU concern the ACC enough where they're afraid of a bad ruling that could blow the whole league up? And that's why they went out and picked up the scraps. And what I mean by that is SMU, California, and Stanford. They added those three in case Clemson and FSU bail. And there's a clause in their television agreement with ESPN that they have to stay above a certain number. Otherwise, it goes to a different scale. But this is not that far away from, I think, a big moment. Next February, there's a clause as well, and I think in their television agreement, that gives ESPN the opportunity to extend the deal. And if they choose not to, then I think it opens up another window. I realize this sounds like some legal class, but that's what they're hoping for, yeah, is put enough pressure on the ACC where they simply say, you guys, you can go. We don't care, as long as they can maintain the rest of the league.
Wow, it's going to be a fascinating time. What did you make of this, of Derek Dooley, who's obviously his dad was a legend. He was at Tennessee, and this power, this equity, private equity firm, and the notion of a group of five breaking out on their own.
Yeah, I want to quote Don King from about 40 years ago, the famous boxing promoter who coined the phrase, only in America. Only in America can someone who has literally failed at pretty much everything he's done in the sport of college football still get a job and represent a group of people. I hope they have their own tournament, Bo, and because I really don't think the group of five has any role. And before somebody comes out of their chair and screams about the NCAA basketball tournament, not the same thing. It's not the same thing about Boise State beating Oklahoma 15 years ago, or even Tulane beating USC. Those are one-offs. Those are outliers. The group of five has no shot in a 12 or 14 team playoff.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And we have a bunch of them here in the state. And when you talk to people who go to those schools, you know, they want that too. They want meaningful games again for their institution. So, yeah, I think most of the people agree with it. I just don't know if Derek's the guy to do it. You can get a lot of jobs when your dad's Vince Dooley, I guess, is the lesson there. We put a little bit of a ribbon on spring football. Arch Manning's still at Texas. And he's going to sit there again. Part of that's family. But when you look back on that decision a couple of years ago and looking at that quarterback room, where are you with that decision, and where do you think they are with that decision now?
Yeah, I'm not really sure I understand it. And, you know, listen, I've lived with the Manning family my whole life, so I understand it, and it's a great family. But I think he would have been better off going someplace else and playing. There's nothing like experience. And, you know, Quinn Ewers figured that out pretty quickly. Why am I going to sit around behind the top draft choices when I can go make a name for myself somewhere else? And I think Arch is taking a risk. I mean, yeah, if Ewers gets hurt this year, but I was in Texas recently, and everybody is raving about him, but it's a spring game, and these things don't matter. What matters is real experience, and he's not getting any of that.
We talked last week about Oklahoma, and you and I shared concern about their entry into the SEC. You were there this weekend. What did you make of it?
I think they're still concerned. Some of it is just the placement of Texas, because Texas, typical Texas, at the right moment after being in the wilderness for 15 years, they've suddenly got a great program, and that really bugs Oklahoma. You understand that rivalry. It's all about those two. They feel good about their season, but I think 9 wins is their high side, and that's really not what I would call Oklahoma football.
No, probably not at all. Great talk as always. Thank you for your time, Paul.
You bet, Bo. Talk soon.
All right, that's Paul Feinbaum, the Paul Feinbaum Show, ESPN and SEC Network. Coming up next, we hit a little thing or not a thing. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you miss a live show, you can catch the podcast. If you miss the podcast, our hosts have volunteered to have dinner with you.
Bye, the meatloaf!
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Thursday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Apex Plumbing Pros.
This one's a little combo section from CBS Sports and ESPN. First from CBS Sports, the College Football Playoff Management Committee gained some clarity over details on the upcoming 12-team playoff and positioning of the Army-Navy game during 2 days of meetings, which concluded Wednesday. However, the group ultimately left without discussing many long-term key priorities, including expansion or auto-bid structure. The board, made up of the 10 FBS conference commissioners and new Notre Dame athletic director, Pete Bavacqua, primarily dealt with recapping the 2023 playoff and organizing logistics of the upcoming 12-team playoff. One key commissioner was not present due to a family matter. The discussion was deep in minutia and included everything from ref assignments to family travel budgets for players, which increased from $1.5 million to $7.5 million as the CFP increases from funding 3 to 11 games. So, what do they do with the Army-Navy game if one or both of those teams are in CFP contention? Their answer is sort of do nothing. From ESPN, starting this fall, the CFP selection committee won't consider the results of the game in its final ranking, which will be released 6 days earlier. Both Army and Navy will be eligible for the playoff, but a win in their final game or a loss won't impact their final standing. In the previous four-team system, there was a rule for Army-Navy that would allow the committee to revise its final rankings if necessary. Thing or not a thing?
Okay, a lot there. So not a thing in regard to Army-Navy. There's how many instances in the last 40 years have they ever been even in consideration?
I just think it's funny that they talked about it. Yeah.
Yeah. This is what I think is most a thing about this. You read at one point, you said the board made up of 10 FBS conference commissioners and new Notre Dame athletic director, Pete Bavacqua. So you walk into where are they doing this?
I don't know off the top of my head where
Dallas
this one
or
was.
Something. Somewhere. Right, yeah, so I mean, you walk into some place like that, you check into your JW Marriott. So Petiti and Sankey go presidential suites. Petiti and Sankey go, we're in like the private club level where we have our own lounge. Like that's the way that goes. Everybody else goes underneath. And then when it comes time to like have discussions, the way that I envision this is Petiti and Sankey sit at what is essentially the adults table. And then everybody else is kind of on another table. Like, why in the blue hell are there 10 FBS conferences represented here? You do not all have equal say.
They're keeping up still this charade. Has a commissioner going to these
meetings. They're keeping up with this charade as if everybody's vote is the same. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, and it's all to avoid antitrust. I understand why they're doing it, but my God, what a waste of time.
Well, you say that too. The note of one key commissioner was not present due to a family matter. Well, Greg Sankey has a quote that was asked by reporters after this, and I did not see anything from Tony Petiti. Maybe he's the one. Maybe that's why they didn't get anything done. Because you can't do anything if only Sankey's there.
I guess.
It's not a thing. And what are two things that college football and those that run the sport love to do? They love to have charades and they love to waste time. And this is just more of that. And they're going to do this until we are all far in the ground.
Irving, Texas, by the way, for Heather Dinich.
Right. Yeah. All right, so I guarantee you there's a JW Marriott there. So they love themselves some Marriott points. How many of these guys like get family vacations paid for on Marriott points from meetings on the college football
playoff? All of them.
Like, do they ever have to pay for a hotel?
Well, they probably take, you know, their own jets down there, and like the football coaches in these leagues, they probably have personal use amount of hours on those jets as well.
Well, not all of them. Petiti and Sankey.
Yes,
would be,
okay. I'm thinking of those guys at the top. You're right.
The guy running the AAC ain't flying net jets down there.
That's a good point.
He's commercial, buddy. He's probably trying to bargain for some sort of expanded coach.
But there's the problem that you were talking about, that like I got lost thinking of it from just a Petiti Sankey prism, which is the truth of the decision making. But there are these other people.
Speaking of wasting time, Brett McMurphy, college football reporter for the Action Network, says Kansas State and Iowa State will open the 2025 season in Dublin, Ireland. Florida State and Georgia Tech will be opening this season, the 2024 college football season, in Dublin, Ireland. Thing or not a thing?
I don't care. It's a fun thing. You were over there, Chop, so I'll lean on you in terms of, like, if you notice anybody caring about American football. To me, it would seem like it would be a little bit of a stretch, especially the collegiate side. Like, I get it with Notre Dame. There's value there in the fact that they're the Irish and all of that. But what this is, isn't it the Aer Lingus? Isn't that the name of the air company?
Yeah, and like a travel agency in America. Yeah.
So it's a combination of let's get a bunch of people to Ireland in August, and that's what this is about. It's basically a travel company that put this thing together. I don't really pay once the game kicks. I pay no real attention to where the game's being played. You know what I mean? It's not like baseball where like you see like the surroundings of the stadium with certain camera angles. Like it's just a football game. It was kind of like in COVID. If I didn't know that there was no one there, I'm not sure I would know it the way they shot it. So it really doesn't matter to me where it's played.
No, like, yeah, it seems like it's something fun for the fans. It's cool that it's on week zero. So I wonder if they have, like, outstretched ideas of how much people enjoy this game. Because, yeah, it's week zero and there's something on, so people are ready to watch it. But if this were somehow in week three and was like the culmination of somebody's out of conference schedule, I just don't think it would have that juice to it. I guess they do conference games most of the time, though, now that I'm thinking about it, because we've had some Big Ten, mm-hmm. Big Ten versus Big Ten. These are Florida State and Georgia Tech, both ACC schools for now. Kansas State and Iowa State, both Big 12 schools. So it's interesting that they're kind of taking the NFL model in that sense. So they're not playing a neutral site out of conference game. Like somebody's losing a home game out of this by going over there and giving this up. That would be just a conference home game for either Kansas State or Iowa State. No, there was not a big college football contingent that I noticed. Not even like in any of the bars or anything, like pictures of anything like that. When we were up high at Guinness, I could see the stadium. They're very geared towards tourism in Dublin, so they love this. They love anything that's going to bring people there because they're ready to host things like that. But yeah, it's for the traveling fans and getting them to go over there. It's not really for the people in Ireland. Or do they even have any like idea that it's expanding college football into other parts of the world? No,
I don't even know. I never pay attention where the game is played. You know what's interesting is you were saying that about the tourism. Like, it does feel like Ireland in the last decade has gone so much more all in on tourism than, for example, Scotland.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much more Irish tourism. You don't get much Scottish tourism.
Yeah, Dublin is super geared towards tourism. We were only there for 3 full days, I believe, and we only did stuff in Dublin. We didn't even have time to get out of there. I mean, that was our plan because we knew that we'd have enough stuff. Yeah. But yeah, you're not even talking about excursions and getting out to the countryside and all the other things you can do while you're over there. Jazz beat writer Ryan Miller reporting the Utah hockey ownership has added 2 more trademark applications. So now the full list is the Utah Mammoth, Ice, Yetis, Venom, Fury, Blizzard, Outlaws, Hockey Club, or Utah HC. Thing or not a thing?
Okay. These are all fine. This is how I would do. This is where I would go. Yetis is one. Utah Yetis, come on. I mean, that's a home run. I mean, that fits in terms of their location. It rolls off the tongue. So I think that one is great. I think Utah Outlaws, I saw some imaging for that that was kind of cool with like a hockey stick, skull and crossbones with a cowboy hat on that I thought was kind of cool and would fit like the western part of it. So I think both of those are home runs. I think Utah Venom could not suck anymore. That screams like minor league hockey nonsense. I don't like Fury either. Blizzard, okay. Mammoth. So that would be like a woolly mammoth, right? Is that what you're hoping for there? Like the woolly mammoth type thing?
I would think so, yeah.
That's a cumbersome name. Hockey club I would have under it. But I think they got two home runs. I think Yetis and Outlaws both work really well.
I think Yetis would also work as like a natural rival for the Kraken. Like two monsters, yeah. And they're both out there in the West Coast. Yeah,
I like it. I think Yetis is...
I know Utah's not quite West Coast, but you know what I mean.
I think just do the hockey club. Just be the Utah Hockey Club. What do they do? Oh, hockey.
That doesn't work great for kids.
I get it. You got to have a mascot.
You got to have a logo. What are you going to put in the middle of it? Just a giant HC
sweater? The hockey sticks crossing the puck. Or an H made of hockey sticks. Yeah.
I think you got two good ones. I think Yetis and Outlaws both.
Just real quick here. Jaden Rashada has committed to Georgia.
There you go. Oh. They got the Ohio kid. They get the Ohio kid, Ryan Montgomery, the kid out of Findlay, who's the 4-star, 5-star kid going into his senior year. They had him last week.
His second SEC commitment in 3 years.
Yeah.
Two years. Yeah. He was just a freshman this past season. Yeah.
All right. We'll play a little higher or lower coming up next. We'll have a little fun with the NFL draft. Go around the NFL leading up to the draft as well and visit with Nathan Zagura, one of the voices on the Cleveland Browns radio network. Final hour, Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Matty Ice is currently bathing himself in creamy jalapeno dip.
And I've officially run out of ways to tease this show. Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays at noon.
The Fan.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cash back in the industry with up to 5% cash back on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Not interested in Iowa football? Too bad. Shops will tell you about it anyway. This is Bishop and Friends.
NFL draft is tonight. So far, nothing in the way of trades. I would not put it at all past the NFL and Goodell and all of these things to, even if there are trades that have been worked out or discussed or close to being made final, waiting until tonight to do it. He's creating a television show, guys. He's in prime time on Thursday and Friday. He's going head-to-head against NHL and NBA playoffs. I'm certain that he was quite upset with what Rodgers did two years ago, to take attention away from the draft, although it did create more interest in the sport leading into it.
Yeah, I do wonder, like, people were probably flocking to wherever anybody was talking about the NBA for more news on that. So,
yeah, he's making a television show. You know, this thing forever was all day Saturday, and then it closed down on Sunday, and now he's got it Thursday. It's Friday. Chops, you were talking about this in the first hour of the show. I'm with you. I like the Thursday. I wonder if they would ever consider moving off of Friday,
like
taking a day off, and Thursday, then doing the second round and third on Saturday night. And then finishing Sunday day.
I think
Friday's a tough spot.
The problem is with moving it cities, that's probably a tough ask to say there's a day in between
for
everybody. Plus, that probably moving cities also helps with like the built-in travel day of Sunday. That's no longer a draft day either. But yeah, I think it would be a better from an at-home viewing standpoint, which is most people who take in the draft.
I don't understand it, how people...
Could they do first round on Thursday and the rest of it on Saturday?
You could.
If you started at noon, you could fit in the...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
My guess is they probably still rate better second and third round on Friday night than they would Saturday at noon, though, would be my guess. But we'll see. I think it's amazing that 200,000 people go to these things and watch Goodell say people's names. I think it's stupefying that they've created this traveling circus. It's wild to me.
It's like going to a concert where they just list off the names of their songs.
Yeah.
They don't actually play them.
Yeah. Just, and now
you know these.
Yeah, it's wild. All right, let's play a little higher, lower. Hit it, Reese.
Bishop and Friends present higher or lower.
Sponsored by The Waterworks. Trust the pros at The Waterworks for all your plumbing, drain, heating, and cooling needs. Visit thewaterworks.com today to get started.
All right, so today's higher or lower is in honor of the NFL draft and comes to us from friend of the program, John Breach, on CBS Sports. He ranks the NFL's 10 biggest draft busts since 1990, the year that I came into existence. You want to start at 1 or do you want to start at 10?
Start at 1.
I think 1, yeah.
Because we got to know who's... We got to know who's... Yeah.
I think you start at 1.
You can't go any higher than this, but Jamarcus Russell, the first overall pick of the 2007 draft by the then Oakland Raiders. Higher or lower for Jamarcus there?
This is the correct number 1. He is the biggest bust. The one thing, usually my guy Leaf is here, and I'm guessing we'll hear his name relatively soon. You could argue Leaf if he was taken ahead of Peyton Manning, but he was not. Russell went number 1 overall. There was very little even talk about anyone else being considered by the Raiders at that time. Here's the other problem. Gold Jackets go 2-3. Lions take Calvin Johnson 2 in that draft. Joe Thomas goes 3 to the Browns. So you go Jamarcus Russell and then Gold Jacket followed. In terms of like the next run quarterback off the board, that's the Brady Quinn draft. So that he comes at 22. But Jamarcus was a foregone conclusion at number 1. The most remarkable story about him was when I think it was Warren Sapp who told the story about when he was with the Raiders, they gave him a DVD to look at film and it was blank. And he came back and said that he watched film and they're like, there's nothing on it, dude. I mean, how big of a failure could that possibly... I mean, that's like Johnny Manziel type stuff, except Johnny didn't go number 1 overall. For his career, 18 touchdowns, 23 picks. He was out of the league in 3 years. As a rookie, however, he only started 1 game. He played in 4, but he only started 1, so the plan was to redshirt him.
I don't know if that was the plan or if he came in overweight and wasn't ready.
I don't know. He was 15. He started all 15 games in year 2, okay. And then by then it was done after that. I'm trying to think. So this would have been like the 07 Raiders. Who would have been the starter at that time? Oh, my God. Kiffin.
Kiffin
Lane
was the
Kiffin
coach.
Was the coach of the Raiders at that time.
Yeah.
My God.
What a mess that would have been.
Holy
oh, wow. Imagine
cow.
Imagine with the how much sports is covered now if that was going on currently.
Kiffin would have been 31
A young Lane Kiffin,
old?
Jamarcus Russell.
Oh
mid-bust.
My gosh, what a mess. Yes, yeah. He's the correct one.
Yeah, that's who I... before, when I saw that we were going to do this list, I was like, okay, I'm going to jot down a few names that come into my mind. And the first one I wrote down was Jamarcus Russell because he is the one. He looked like he was going to be a guy. They do the number 1 overall pick. And it wasn't just that he was bad. It was all the off-field stuff. And you listed the blank DVD story, but tons of other stuff around him. You know, who knows what's rumor and who's what's true. But you know that... some of it was there because they were immediately just done with this guy. I'm not like mad or anything, but he made the Breach, friend of the program, was on yesterday. He cut it off at 1990, so we don't get... is it Mandarich or Mandarich?
Tony Mandarich.
Mandarich. He was 89 draft.
So that draft, I didn't know you were going to talk about this, but I remember it vividly. 1 goes Troy Aikman. 2 goes Tony Mandarich, Packers. 3 is... is it Deion Sanders or Barry Sanders? And then 4 is the other one. So the 3 of the first 4 picks in that draft are Gold Jackets, and Mandrich is the 2.
The 1989 NFL draft, yeah. Aikman, Mandarich, Barry Sanders, Derek Thomas, Deion Sanders to round up the top 5.
So Derek Thomas, too. So Derek
Thomas.
That's
another Gold Jacket.
Yeah, so 4 Gold Jackets in the top 5, and they end up with Tony Mandarich.
At number 2 on this list, again, the 10 biggest draft busts since 1990, is the second overall pick in 1998 by the then San Diego Chargers, Ryan Leaf. Higher or lower for Leaf at 2?
It's probably right. I'm happy with what he's done with his life since. I mean, he was in prison, guys. Like, he was in Montana State prison.
Yeah.
You know, so like, it did not go well, obviously. Knowing him a little, and I had he was more of a friend of a friend. We did some all-star basketball stuff together. I went to a game out there with a bunch of my buddies where they beat, I want to say, Arizona the year that he was a Heisman finalist. His rise was so fast and so unpredicted that it was too much too soon by 1,000,000,000%. And I remember we had gone out boozing the night before, and the next day we were coming out to leave to drive back to Montana, and he was on the phone with Peyton Manning. And he was on the phone with Peyton Manning, and he had a Danny Werfel game-worn jersey on as he was making the call. Like, that community got very small very quick. And it was really surreal to see a guy who I'd known for a long time and to see all of this happening so quickly. And you could tell it was just way too much, way too soon. So when that Chargers thing happened, it was just – he just wasn't properly prepared for what was to come. Just really wasn't.
I also hung out with Ryan Leaf in the 90s, but I don't have any stories to tell of it. No.
In prison? Were you in Montana State Prison?
He is. I mean, yeah, I think he's probably the right choice, but this is something we always get into, a higher or lower, but I don't really disagree with the way John Breach did it, but I do want to get into a little bit, and there's a name coming up of a recent guy on this list that I think falls into the other category. But both Ryan Leaf and Jamarcus Russell also dealing with a lot of off-field stuff that derailed their career, and you know, so you combine that with they also didn't play well, so I think they are the right bust, because they became guys that you just can't even have on your franchise, and nobody else wanted them. You couldn't trade them, you couldn't release them, and he was going to get picked up anywhere. These guys were just gone and out of the league, and that's what makes them two of the biggest busts ever. And since 1990, yeah, 1 and 2, that's a good spot for both of them.
At 3, Akili Smith, taken 3rd overall by the Bengals in 1999. At 4, Trey Lance, taken by the 49ers with the 3rd overall pick in 2021. At 5, Charles Rogers, wide receiver, taken by the Lions, 2nd overall in 2003. Higher or lower for either of those players?
Yeah, you could make an argument for Charles Rogers. He has substance stuff, too. And isn't he dead? I think he died, right? I mean, I said that relatively
2019, yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought he tragically passed. Yeah, he was 2nd overall, you know, in that draft. Akili Smith is one that I think is pretty interesting. So from a pro career standpoint, what is he? He was the 3rd quarterback taken. So it went quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. So that's the obviously the Tim Couch draft. NFL career, he only played 22 games. Holy cow, just 22 games. Usually get a lot more chances than that. 5 touchdowns, 13 picks, 2,000 yards. Yeah, pretty substantial bust.
Here's where I'm going to make an argument for, I think Trey Lance should actually be higher on the list, because there's a few things going into it. One, they had to move up and move a lot to move up to get him. The 49ers did to go get him at number 3. They got him after Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and then Trey Lance. And he just wasn't good enough. Never. He spent 3 years with them, and they just clearly were just the whole time wanted to get him there, but just could not get him on the field. And then he got hurt, and then Brock Purdy happens, and then they trade him, and he's just going to bounce around. And to me, that is almost more bust-worthy, because there's no explanation for it besides he just doesn't have it. The kid was just overvalued and picked too high, and he's just not very good at football.
I agree with your points. The only thing I will say is he's only 23. He's only started 4 games, and injuries derailed it. So there is time for him to have a resurrection. You know, he didn't even get like the Darnold, oh my God, he's terrible. And Darnold's still getting another chance with Minnesota. Like,
yeah.
I would argue like Josh Rosen is maybe the biggest of all these. I mean, like, they bailed on him after a year, and then he never even played. He just bounced around practice. He was in the Browns a couple years ago on a practice squad. Like, I would argue Rosen is like the biggest, like, wow, we were way wrong on this dude. Lance, I'm with you because of all of the factors you mentioned in terms of the guys that they passed to take him. I agree. But at the same time, there is an opportunity for him to maybe develop at some point.
Yeah, that's true. And then he could get himself off the list.
He could get off the list. Right now,
I don't see the path right now.
I would argue, honestly, Trubisky bigger.
Where's he on this list?
He's not on this list. He is not even honorable mention.
He's played a little bit more.
Only 10. So at 10 is Justin Gilbert for the Browns.
He should be higher.
Honorable mentions, Vernon Golston, who got taken with the 6th overall pick by the Jets in 2008. At 9, Justin Blackmon, who was taken with the 5th overall pick by the Jags in 2012.
I really thought he was going to be something.
Steve Emtman. A defensive end taken by the Colts with the 1st overall pick in 92. Mm-hmm. And then at 7, you've got Heath Shuler, taken with the 3rd overall pick in 94 by the then Washington Redskins.
All right. So just for perspective, Justin Gilbert went 8. He played nothing. He's out of the league. He's playing for the Sioux City Bandits currently.
He's really tall.
The Champions Indoor Football League. And he never did anything. He was absolutely nothing. The one thing I'll say on Blackman was always headed to be really good. And then substance
abuse
derailed
him
almost immediately. The reason I say Trubisky is the Bears went up to get him in a draft that contained Watson and Mahomes. So I also think about that when I think about busts of like, so you wanted a quarterback. How badly did you misidentify the guys around it? I mean, that would be like the Browns the year they drafted Baker drafting Josh Rosen instead, and he was off the team in a year.
Yeah, because
that's that type of bust.
Because with Trey Lance, the other 2021 quarterbacks, outside of Trevor Lawrence, even though he's been semi-disappointing, have not done the promise. I mean, you're talking Mac Jones, Justin Fields, who I think has been the best of the group outside of Trevor Lawrence, but still, I mean, obviously the Bears gave up on him, and then you've got Zach Wilson and Trey Lance in there as well. That's a tough year, that 2021.
It is. Right now, Justin Fields, Mac Jones do not have a second contract.
Yeah, right.
So that's
and they're both not with them. They're both not going to get a second contract with their first team either.
No, not at all. Speaking of Justin Fields, he is in a prove-it situation in Pittsburgh. And can the Bears actually pull off one of the most remarkable real estate development deals of all time? It'd be amazing if they could. It's a crazy deal. We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We're known for three things: games, conversation, and common man yelling about things only he cares about. The Fan, Ohio Sports Desk.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the Hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hey there, guys. You know, in your early to mid-30s, you start to lose 2 to 3% of your testosterone production every single year. It happens gradually, and then before you know it, you just don't feel like the same man that you did in your 20s or 30s. There's a lot of things to look for here. Decrease in libido, certainly. Putting on weight, less productivity in the gym. Poor sleep or wake up feeling tired, sad, depressed. The good news, though, is if you're like most guys and you start to get treatment for that, it can change the way you feel about all of those things. For me, I was just worn out, chasing the kids all over the stuff with the U Sports. And I was looking for a permanent solution I found with my friends at Tri-State Men's Health. I've been on the program for about a month now. The difference is tangible. It is noticeable. Ask my wife. She will certainly corroborate that. So here's what I want you to do. If any of these things apply to you, go to tristatemenshealth.com and take the low T quiz on the website. If the symptoms are there and they match up, schedule a consult with Tri-State Men's Health. They're going to do your lab work, have your results in about a half hour. I went through the process, could not have been happier with all of it. You're going to have a consult with a licensed medical provider, review your results, discuss your options. Then you're going to make a decision on what you want to do with their medical team. The cost of appointment is $99. That includes the consult, the T and PSA test. If you sign up like I did, your appointment's free. Four offices, including two here in town. Give them a call today, 800-900-9654. Visit tristatemenshealth.com for more on that. So the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to go with Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, both on prove-it deals. There is not a contract extension for either one of them. They will play this year out and then potentially make a decision as they declined the $25 million fifth-year option on Fields. I get both of it, but that also tells me that Pittsburgh, while they will probably give Russell Wilson the first starts, they're going to want to see what they have in Justin Fields. I don't see a scenario where he doesn't start games this year for Pittsburgh. That is a true competition, not just for now, but long-term for the Steelers, potentially for Fields.
Well, because they both are, you know, Russell Wilson, not as good as he used to be, and Justin Fields still kind of has to prove it to the league at large. But we've seen the flashes. They're both more than competent enough that it's not a tank situation, which doesn't seem like something the Steelers are ever into.
Oh, you can win with both.
But if one of these guys isn't your quarterback, if it really doesn't work out, then where are they left? Do they just sign one of them? Do they go looking next year? Because I don't think they'd be high enough in the draft to go get their next guy, because I don't think the Steelers ever are going to be that.
It's a low risk, potentially high reward for them. It's pretty damn smart business.
Maybe the playoffs with Kenny Pickett.
Yeah.
Like, this is a team that needs just better quarterback play than that. and the bar is set so damn low, you think you can get Russell Wilson from last season would put them in contention for the division, it feels like.
We do this all the time. Wilson was a lot better last year than people realize.
Yeah. He was actually better at the end of that first year.
He was dinking and dunking a lot, but that Pittsburgh offense feels set up for that, plus a couple, I mean, sprinkle in some George Pickens over the middle.
Yeah, I think it's set up for it for sure. I think Fields is in a real critical...
I think Fields will win the locker room.
He will, but he's also going to have to win the coaching staff, because what happened in Chicago was become very evident that he was somebody who was either unable or unwilling to do what was asked out of the play calling. And probably the biggest indictment of him is that his offensive coordinator went to the Raiders and said, yeah, we're better with Gardner Minshew. That tells you about all you need to know. Justin, talking to guys when I was at the combine, talking about Fields with people around the league, and the consensus was that he was a guy who gets coaches fired because you scheme something up and he doesn't throw it, and then he makes something happen and people think he's better than he is. That's not what we saw here. So I don't know what happened in Chicago that led to that, but that's the spot he's in. So this is a critical offseason for him and a critical season for him. His former team, in a critical juncture, the Bears unveiled new stadium plans. By the way, this is brilliant. I mean, the Browns should do this. If they are going to do that dome stadium thing, like, do one of these and get these images out there. So it was an incredible proposal. It's a nearly $5 billion enclosed stadium and redevelopment just south of where Soldier Field currently is. And in the video, which if you haven't seen, Google it. Many of you probably have seen it by now. They have these sweeping shots of, you know, the former Soldier Field is still sitting there because it's a historical monument. So they kind of have it sitting there. It's beautiful. The stadium's beautiful. It's awesome. They talked yesterday about hosting Super Bowls and all of these things. They actually have one end is wide. So it's like the Vikings. One end is wide open so you can see out into the skyline of Chicago, which is obviously so very, very famous. In the video, they show about hosting concerts and Big Ten championships and Final Fours and Super Bowls. And yes, you would get all those things in Chicago. I don't know Chicago, certainly the way Mike does. Been there a handful of times. Knowing it as rudimentally as I do, I just was looking at this. I was just thinking to myself, where are 70,000 people going to park?
That same thing Big Cat from Barstool said.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, he's a Chicagoan. So he's
like, first thing was like, this is so awesome. I can't wait for this. And he's like, me, the other part of me that lives in reality, where's everybody going to park?
Okay. I feel better. So the Big Ten meetings, anytime they were over there, they were at that old Hilton, which is right adjacent to that, right across the street. And so anytime I've been there, I've been in that area. And I've been to a game at Soldier Field. And I just thought, makes me feel better. So if a Chicagoan has the same question marks.
I guess everybody will just have to take a water taxi on the lake and just get up that way. The one thing that stood out to me, though, they're trying to put it on a hotel tax. So we'll see what the voters do that. But we've seen that across the country, that most times that it's increased tax to build a stadium, voters vote it down right now. But they're trying to kind of pass it off on non-Chicagoans by putting it on the hotel. But it's a $5 billion stadium. The Bears say that it's going to result in $8 billion worth of like added revenue for the area. And I was like, okay, so if you guys are putting in $2.05 billion and it's $5 billion, and then $8 billion is what it's going to be from an economic standpoint, that's $3 billion of profit there. And if the Bears put up $2.05 billion, I don't think they want to do this without getting a profit. So I don't know. I just don't trust those numbers when they throw them out there.
Here's what you should do. This is my advice to the Browns, the Bengals, anybody who's doing a new stadium. Don't put it in terms of taxpayers are on the hook for X billion. Put it in terms of this is how much it will affect your taxes.
Yeah.
So yes, it's $3 billion, but if it's another $7 a year in your taxes, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no.
Do it that way. Don't do it from the perspective of the giant. You can't wrap your head around $3 billion. You can wrap your head around $7. That's not that hard. You can do that. All right, time for a pop-up shops movie review. Go ahead.
For decades, filmmakers have recontextualized the anxieties that many people feel into horror monsters. In the 1950s, Godzilla was born over the fear of nuclear weapons. The original Dawn of the Dead was a critique of consumerism heading into the 80s. And while the new movie Civil War is an action drama, I felt it aligned a lot closer to a zombie movie than a war epic, Lo and behold, writer/director Alex Garland wrote 28 days later, so he still has a knack for capturing those frantic, frightening moments 20-plus years later. It follows a small group that includes writers and photographers covering the war as they are trying to get from New York to Washington, D.C. It's pretty plot-heavy from there with these main characters, so I don't want to give more details. Just know it's more about covering war from the perspective of journalists rather than the war itself. The final half hour is a lot of action, though, so you get some stunning and shocking images. But the nitty-gritty details of the conflicting sides are sparse and not the focus. I can't speak to how others might interpret this movie, but I do feel like I wasn't being hit over the head with any sort of partisan political messaging. They barely scratch the surface on the ideological differences between the sides and basically take the angle that war is such a horrific experience for everyone involved. It has a brisk pace and only slows down for effect with a few scenes on the road where they run into people on the fringe of what is actually happening around them. All in all, war on your home soil looks like it sucks for everyone. I give Civil War an A-.
Wow. All right. A-. You hold the, that's tough to get into that A category out of you, Chopper. There you go. Is this streaming or is it just theaters?
This is just theaters right now.
All right. Very good. Nathan Zagura, Cleveland Browns. Color analyst on the radio network, Cleveland Browns Daily co-host, will join us coming up next on the Browns plans over the next 2 days and his wildest draft day stories. He's got a lot. It's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Common Man and T-Bone are idiots. You should listen to them anyway.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan, Ohio's idiot destination.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast, or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Yeah, he's an enormous bee of a broadcaster. You hear him on the Columbus, here on the Cleveland Browns radio network, on Browns games all fall. He is a co-host on Cleveland Browns Daily. He is Browns color analyst, and a hell of a guy. Nathan Zagura, he joins us on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. All right, buddy, this is what I want out of you. Your craziest draft day story. Let's start there. Which was the craziest draft day for you as since you've been with the Browns?
So it's actually pretty easy, and we're on the 10th anniversary of it, which would be going back to 2014 when the draft was still at the Radio City Music Hall. That's what it's called, Radio City, in New York City, in Manhattan, and I was there and. I remember being in the building when the Browns made the move to trade up to number 22, and it was bedlam, the energy, and then they picked Johnny Manziel, John Football, and the place goes absolutely bonkers. And just the energy of that and the excitement of that, even though it obviously turned out to be fool's gold, was an incredible moment. I also remember that was the first time I ever did pre-draft TV, and I said that we were going to trade down from our first pick, and I thought we would maybe take a corner, which we ended up trading down with from 4 to 8 and taking Gilbert. And then I said they might move back in the first round and get a quarterback, which they did. And by the way, I had no scores at the time. It was just kind of like looking at it. And I was involved in terms of writing like reports and stuff, but I had no idea what we were actually going to do. Like, I didn't even know Justin Gilbert was even a possibility at that point, because apparently he wasn't until a couple of days before the draft, but neither here nor there. But that energy was wild. And then the part that makes it the craziest story is as I was walking from Radio City Music Hall to my hotel, a car came by, like a SUV, and leaning out of the back were two of the biggest luminaries possible for the Cleveland Browns. Not the biggest, I'd say a step below the biggest.
Yep.
And they were leaning out of the car screaming Johnny Football at me. And, like, going nuts. And I'm like, this is welcome to the NFL. That was my first draft with the team. And I'm like, this is wild. I will say that that experience has never been matched again. And, in fact, the draft has become so much less important for the Cleveland Browns in recent memory. And that's a wonderful thing.
You mentioned, that's a hell of a story. You mentioned so, Yeah, that's crazy.
Unbelievable.
I can't even imagine Radio City Music Hall and the moment, because everyone was waiting on Johnny. Like, who's going to do it?
Yes.
So all of that stuff was happening. It was building that. He really dominated that whole process. Yeah. You mentioned how the Cleveland Browns aren't in that spot anymore. This will be the third straight year without a one.
Yep.
I married a Cleveland girl. Since 2007, I moved up here. I mean, I always loved the draft, but then I realized like what it was for Browns fans. It was their Super Bowl. And you and I say all the time, the draft used to be the Super Bowl. Now the Super Bowl is a Super Bowl, right? That's the expectation.
Yep.
Do Browns fans know what to do without a first round pick again? I mean, like, what's your sense of the fan base on three straight years without a one on something that used to be the holiday?
It's pretty great in the sense that, you know, and I know you encounter this as well, but when I go, people ask me about the draft, but they're kind of like, they want to talk about the guys that are on the team already, guys coming back from injury, what the roster already looks like. So it's a completely different situation. In the past, you were looking in the draft for a savior for a long time. Mm-hmm. In the past, in the draft, you were looking for surefire day one starters. And I'm talking, for a while, that could be your fifth round, sixth round, seventh round picks. You're like, oh, this guy could come in and start right now. I don't know that there's a starting spot available. So the draft has taken on maybe some succession planning is going to happen here. What are we going to do at wide receiver over the next couple of years? What are we going to do at offensive tackle over the next couple of years? What are we going to do at defensive tackle over the next couple of years? You know, we probably need some linebacker depth. We probably have to acknowledge the reality that it's probably more likely than not that Nick Chubb will be back, but that he won't be the Nick Chubb we saw prior to this devastating injury. And so as his age continues to go, do you have to think about succession planning at the running back position? So it's very different. I think people are pretty calm about it, honestly, yeah, which is great. They're like, okay, what are they going to do? Second round? Whatever, you know. But people are excited for this draft because I think the first round is going to be so interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, potential five, maybe six quarterbacks go in the first round, trade up, all of that. So that can be interesting. But really, you know, I'll tell you to do what I think Andrew Berry is doing. And he said this at an event I was with it Thursday night. Obviously, he's going to be paying attention to draft. But he's like, I'm going to be binging Shogun, which I am now three episodes in, and I couldn't recommend more to you or your audience. It is tremendous.
I told you you'd love that. I knew you'd love the Shogun.
Unbelievable. Yeah,
it's great. It's great. So you mentioned this, and this is a critical thing because I do remember, you know, when they draft like a seventh round the receiver, like, oh, maybe he can start. And we're long past that, right? So the one thing you did say, though, I was just curious about, if there is a position where a player could be drafted and start / be a major contributor, it would have to be D tackle, right? And one of the names that we see linked is Mike Hall out of Ohio State. Yep. I'm not going to have you break down Mike Hall, but just from philosophically, is really that's it? Is that the one spot?
Yeah. I mean, because, and I was actually talking about this with a member of the front office yesterday. it's defensive tackle or Sam linebacker. Mm-hmm. And our starting Sam linebacker is going to play five to 10 plays a game anyway. So that's not even really a true starting spot. So yeah, the one area where you could get a guy that has the potential to make an impact, I think this year, would be defensive tackle. However, I will tell you, they are quite enamored with the signing of Quentin Jefferson, as am I. 11 sacks the last two seasons. You got Dalvin there. You got Mo Hurst coming back, Shelby Harris coming back, Siaki Ika. So it's a crowded room, and obviously drafting someone potentially like Hall in the second round would mean one of those guys will not be on the roster, but it gives you somebody for the future because Jefferson, Harris, and Hurst are all on one-year deals. So I do think that's a place where you could get an immediate impact. The other would be, you know, potentially running back, right, in the sense that they like Jerome Ford, they like Pierre Strong, they brought in a Deontay Foreman, they brought in a Nyheim Hines. We don't know what's happening with Nick Chubb. There is a potential that, you know, they could take a running back that they think is better than all those guys, and he ends up playing some this year. At receiver, I think you would get somebody with a specific skill set or talent that you think you could harness, but they would probably be a role player with the idea that in 2025, that person becomes an impact every down type of a starter. So I really think if you look at the second, third round picks, if you're looking for a second or third round pick that's going to truly impact the team this year, that is likely only to come at defensive tackle. Wide receiver, I think you could get some impact, and then offensive tackle would basically be a redshirt year to come in and either be the third tackle or a starting tackle opposite DeJuan Jones in 2025.
All right, brother. That story was crazy. The Manziel one.
It was
That's nuts.
Well, it was kind of euphoric, right?
Of course, it was pure joy.
The traded up, there was, you know, you feel that buzz in the air when you're at a big sporting event and that electricity, so you felt that, and then walking on the streets and being screamed at in terms of pure joy. by some of the luminaries was something I will absolutely never forget. I'm like, here we go.
Yeah.
And it was a wild ride, to say the very least.
It was a short ride. It was like that top thrill dragster they have at Cedar Point. It's exciting, but it's real short, buddy. Good stuff, as always, my man.
You got it. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that's my great friend Nathan Segura, Cleveland Browns radio analyst. You hear him on the Browns games right here on The Fan, Cleveland Browns Daily, senior media analyst with the Browns, joining us on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Reese, were you locked into Johnny? Did you buy into it, or were you even skeptical? Were you skeptical of that, or were you excited?
No, I was skeptical. I was like, there's no way this guy's going to be like a legitimate NFL quarterback, because he doesn't want to play in the NFL.
Do you remember his pro day when he wore the pads and the visor? His pro day? I always just went back to the Wright Thompson piece in ESPN the magazine, where he was so disrespectful to like his aunt at a family dinner at their club, and how he's ordering beers playing golf in front of his dad when he was like 19. I thought, this is not.
No, he's a jackass. And the fact that they took Gilbert before that, and I didn't know who Justin Gilbert was going into that draft, because there wasn't any talk about the Browns going that high for a cornerback, but Mike Pettine liked him because he was tall. That was a debacle of Brownsian proportions. Draft was.
Things are better now. They've had a bunch of pretty solid drafts over the last 4 or 5 years. Three things on a Thursday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We have so many local shows, I can't fit them in a 10-second promo. So let's just say we're live and local all damn day.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry, with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Drink recommendations, movie reviews, sports discussion, and whatever the hell Reeser does. This is Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Reese. What do you have on the poll?
Daily Fan Poll, sponsored by ER Auto Care, masters of our craft. Today's Fan Poll asks, what is your favorite part of the NFL draft? 50% of you say hope for my favorite team is the best part of the draft. Trades, 32%. I don't watch the draft, 15%. 3% say players' outfits is the favorite part of the NFL draft.
I like when the question is, what is your favorite part of the NFL draft? And one of the possibilities is, I don't watch it.
Is Goodell still, like, booable? Are we just doing that for tradition now?
Yeah, they all do that. You boo them all.
Yeah, we just boo commissioners. Because he hasn't seemed to do anything, like, super egregious in a while, but everybody's still going to boo him tonight.
Yeah, we also asked the question, what would you be watching tonight? So then I was, we did a little poll, about 330 of you responding in about a couple hours. What are you going to watch tonight? NFL draft was 63%, Cavs NBA playoffs was 30%, and then NHL playoffs 6.7% is the way that that shook out. Man, I would, as real quickly, I was watching the NHL last. Brad Marchand's the worst, man.
He just is.
He's the worst. I looked up and he's doing something. He's awful. I was rooting, and he got the empty netter to clinch it. Mm-hmm. Ugh, gosh, that guy's brutal. If he's on your team, you would love him more than anything in the world, but gosh, he's tough everywhere else. Three things, hit it.
One, two. Three things.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
I was at a high school lacrosse game last night, and I saw the most unhinged mother. I should say I heard the most unhinged mother I've ever heard in my life. This was an exact quote. If you don't understand the effing sport, stop playing it, you D.A., and then screamed. So, everyone could hear this, and we were 15 feet away. Get 24 off the effing field. Mother, this is a mom. It was insane. Like, I just, folks.
Ma'am, these are children.
Even if they're high schoolers, like, take the foot off the accelerator, man. We live in a society. Please.
Even if your kid is getting a scholarship, it's not today. So
no, it's not today, man.
Yesterday for me, it was a pretty good day. J-Lo surprised me. She brought me balloons for my birthday. She said, we can go wherever you want to dinner. It's like, you know what? I want to go to the Chinese buffet. So we did that. I got to just relax. But I do have to say this. While it was still a good day, and I'm not complaining about it, and this, you know, your birthday changes which day. I never really thought about it, though. But Wednesday is the most awkward day for your birthday to be on. I didn't know what to do with it. And I've kind
it's
of
first
now,
Friday.
That helps for sure. But now I've kind of straddled the 2 weekends. I went home last weekend, going to do some stuff this weekend. But yeah, I didn't know. It's sort of like when Halloween is on the middle of the week and you don't really know what to do with it.
So the U.S. Open is going to take place June 13th at Pinehurst number 2. It looks like the USGA is going to give Tiger Woods an exemption. Right now, Charlie, his son, is vying for one of 5 spots available at the Legacy Golf and Tennis Club in Point St. Lucie, Florida. He's plus 4 through 9 on the day.
So not making it is
probably
the code for
not.
That. Number 2 for me, I mentioned that in my efforts to get NBC to like programs that I considered to be iconic 20 years ago, Friday Night Lights, that took, but he didn't take the bit to that quite the way that I thought he would. I don't know if the episodes are too long for him. He liked it, but it wasn't overwhelming. Well, I got him with Arrested Development. He is all in. So last night, after the others went to bed, he came down. He's like, Dad, can we watch that show you and I were watching yesterday? And I said, yeah. So I pop it in. He binged like 3 episodes. Must have been like yesterday after school. He binged 3 episodes. And so I'm watching it again for the first time in a very long time. And the early episodes are just pristine. And I think I have to revisit. I was thinking about like my all-time, like, not number one, but like number 2 comedy guys. And you think of like Leon from Curb, or, Funkhauser from Curb, or Kramer from Seinfeld. Joe Bluth is in the conversation. He's throwing 160, man, every episode. Will Arnett crushing Joe Bluth.
Friday Night Lights is a victim of the old network model. It should probably be like 10 episodes a season instead. Yes. Especially that first season, it's just way too long.
It's like 22. 25.
Yeah, it's too many episodes, and there's a lot of filler in there. And then everything you remember from the show happens in that first season, practically, except for Michael B. Jordan doesn't come along until West Dillon becomes a thing. This one, I get the reasoning, okay? But I don't think Chet Holmgren should be considered a rookie. I don't think anybody who's in their second year with an organization. He was part of an NBA team last year. He used that year of his contract. He was paid. I understand that he got hurt. But if he got hurt in the first game of the season, he wouldn't be a rookie this year. But because he got hurt in the summer league, he is. He's up for rookie of the year. No, he's a second-year player. I don't think that those guys should be counted as rookies.
I don't have a problem with it.
If you are interested in tuning in to College Game Day before the NFL draft, that thing starts on ESPN at 5 o'clock. Ryan Day is going to appear sometime in that broadcast, along with Brian Kelly, Lincoln Riley, and Nick Saban is going to make his, debut as an official member of the College Game Day staff. I'm interested to see if Day is in Detroit, or if he'll be doing it live from his office at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center.
Always be
How
prudent.
Quickly will people realize he's up there and then begin the booing? I imagine it'd be overwhelming, right?
Oh, because it's in Detroit? Yeah.
Yeah, he's across enemy lines. He's got to do like Woody. Don't buy gas up there, coach.
Do you wear, if you go, do you wear all scarlet? Like, are you in the scarlet jumpsuit?
Oh, yeah. Well, he likes those, like, patterned light red or pinkish-hued coats.
Yeah.
So sport jacket, that's kind of his go-to. You'll be in one of those. Number 3 for me, speaking of the draft tonight, this is my yearly reminder of how much I love Mel Kiper. He's a warm blanket. He's gotten plenty of stuff right, plenty of stuff wrong. I enjoy all of it. There's been a lot of options in terms of where you could get your draft coverage over the years. I'm a Mel guy. I'll be on Mel tonight. I'm watching him. It's amazing that the guy doing the same thing for all these years, same haircut, everything, and he basically created an industry. It's one that didn't exist until he created it. And the fact that he has 5 landlines, it's all just a win. Go Kiper.
Last one for me. I sent J-Lo a tweet of this guy with this great draft setup that actually Sam Monson had retweeted. So that's how it ended up in my timeline. He has a large TV flanked by 2 slightly smaller ones, but that's not it. There are 5 what look to be 32 to 40 inch TV/monitors under the main TV. So if you're keeping math there, that's 8 total TVs. I sent it with no other caption. I just said, And J-Lo responded, absolutely not. So I don't think it's going to happen for me.
Back to the Ellie De La Cruz extension conversation. If the Reds don't sign him to a contract extension, then absolutely sell the team, Castellini family. But Max Scherzer had an interesting proposal for umpires. It's like every week they ruin a game and Andrew Hernandez somehow is still doing the job there. But umpires to get promoted and relegated to the minors based on a grading scale. Great idea, but that union is probably the strongest official union in professional sports. They're not going anywhere.
Other than the MLB players, it probably is. And the NBA players, pretty straight, but it's very strong. Enjoy your NFL draft. We'll be back tomorrow to break it all down. Rothman and Ice up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The only radio show Ryan Day listens to when we're holding him hostage, making him listen to a radio show. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan. This is a Fan Action Update.
This Action Update is brought to you by Tipico. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. The draft isn't until tonight, but there's already odds out. Who will be the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year? Caleb Williams is the favorite at plus 350. Then it's Marvin Harrison, with the second best odds at 6-1. Receivers Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze have the third and fourth best odds for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Then Jaden Daniels is fifth. For your Tipico Action Update, I'm Scotty Vegas.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit LindsayHonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus. The Fan.
Good afternoon. I'm Matt Andrews. The Crew beat Monterey last night 2-1 on the first leg of the semifinal round of the round of the